Troy. Welcome to WRAF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome. I guess for the few Republicans in the audience, you're lucky that we weren't doing this show on Wednesday night, right, Julene?
Yes, we've calmed down a bit. Still very relieved, though.
Yeah, wow. The White Christian Nationalist Party lost, otherwise known as the Republicans, got their fannies handed
to
them.
They sure did. That, wow. That young statistician from Michigan.
Right. Oh, is he from Michigan?
He's from here. Yeah. There was an article about him in the Free Press today, and he predicted it. We were talking about it on the show, where he predicted 75% that Obama was going to win.
Nate Silver, indeed. Yeah, one of the things that the Republicans said before, he's pro-Obama, and his predictions don't mean anything. And he's gay.
They tried to smear him that he was gay.
Little
unimportant tidbit out, right?
Well, it was kind of important. The gay marriage won in a couple of states.
Yes.
Marijuana won in a couple of states. You know,
like just out and out marijuana.
You know who I'm really, in a way, well, I mean, one always is in awe of youth. If you're like 18 or 19 or 20 now, you're just really just on the cusp of this revolution. You know, 30, 40 years ago when they overruled state laws that prohibited a marriage between black people and white people, something, I forgot what it was, like, I don't know, only 37% of the American, or the white population approved of that, right? So two-thirds of the people thought it was, yeah, and now it just sounds insane, right? It sounds like South Africa or something like that.
Even though there was still the church in the South that wouldn't marry a black couple.
Here, yeah, yeah. Well, I'd like to hear your opinions, and I know Jalene would as well, and I'm sure our audience would, and WRIF has been kind enough to set this program aside to do some public affairs broadcasting, and you are our co-hosts.
Yeah, and we were on pins and needles, and I know a lot of you who are think more along the lines of Peter and I, we're on pins and needles, so like to hear how...
I wasn't.
Well, you know...
I was worried.
I'm a woman.
Yeah, right.
So I was thinking a little bit differently than you.
Well, I think it was Bill Maher.
Even though you are for everything...
Bill Maher said, women, your uterus is safe for the next 4 years.
Yes.
Because.
Hallelujah.
Because, you know, the Republican platform is about repealing Roe versus Wade, which allowed, imagine this, it said that issues like this are a private matter between a doctor and a woman.
And her body.
Except, what do these Republicans want? They want the political state to intervene. I thought they were against
it. Wasn't it, there's something about small government?
And then there was this stuff about contraception. Yeah. Single women voted, there was a 38% gap between the Republican candidate, the White Christian Nationalist Party candidate. I mean, that's what it all is. I mean, and the base is narrowing. Here's one of my favorite headlines. Republicans search for answers about what went wrong in the election.
It doesn't take much to figure it out.
I got to tell you, you know, there's what is it? I think it's called Schadenfreude, which means that you get delight in other people's misery.
Oh, are we Schadenfreude?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's okay.
I got to tell you, did you see the Romney concession speech?
I did.
You know, he didn't have one. You know that, right?
Yeah. Well, he was planning a fireworks show in Boston.
Boston, what is the matter with this guy? This guy lost Massachusetts so badly where his headquarters is. Why wouldn't he have, like, his headquarters in Birmingham, Alabama or Jackson, Mississippi or something like that?
He tried all that noise.
Yeah.
Never.
But so he didn't, you know, he thought he was going to win. They were all stunned because the look on his face was so wonderful because he's thinking, wait a minute. I'm royalty. I'm economic royalty. I'm a multimillionaire.
This is automatic.
Billionaires support me. They're the only, the guy in office now, he's collared.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, he can't win.
He still uses that word, probably.
Yeah, I mean, he was like something from Father Knows Best, that series
really?
From the 1950s.
He really was.
Yeah.
And still always will be.
Right. And he's in a state where he loses by the largest percent. This is where he's going to have his victory party. Right?
In Massachusetts.
Spent $25,000 on fireworks. He doesn't have a concession speech, and then he has to come up, and people say, you know, what was the thing? He was classy. Well, you know what? He was close to classy, which he was for about 5 minutes. The rest of it, he was just low down
dirty.
Right. And also the state where Elizabeth Warren won as the senator and beat the Republican Senator Scott Brown. He also lost in Michigan.
Yes,
another
he did.
One of his and, home states.
And every time we talked about him leaning the other way, I always thought, how could it be? You know that he cut off the credit cards to people who worked for him around the country the minute he knew he lost?
Right.
Did you read that story?
Yeah.
So people are stranded in cities where they've traveled to campaign for this guy, and he cuts them off. They're in cabs. They're at restaurants, you know, per diem. They can't pay for their hotels.
Right, that's just amazing.
That's even dirtier. It says it all, Peter.
Well, Mitt Romney went to Cranbrook, what's it called? Well, we usually just call it Cranbrook.
Yeah.
If you're not from around here, it's a very wealthy prep school that previously only had, maybe only the sons, pardon me, of the ultra wealthy. Now it's a little more open.
Yeah, but there's women there. In fact, my neighbor's girlfriend goes to Cranbrook.
Okay.
And lives
well,
there.
When Mitt went to Cranbrook in suburban Detroit, there was a famous incident where he and a bunch of his snotty rich buddies held down a gay kid and cut off his hair because the kid had bleached. And this is like in the 60s or something like that.
He claims he doesn't know about it.
He doesn't remember. Everybody else involved in it remembers and apologizes.
Forgot about that. Yeah. And everyone else, like you said, they not only apologize, they talk about how profusely bad they feel about what they did.
Yeah. Now, the Cranbrook School paper, the Crane Clarion, endorsed Barack Obama in this election.
No. Right on.
So that's the new word, Schadenfreude, enjoying other people's misery.
We'll just do it for one night.
Yeah, I might actually really like to hear what everyone's opinion was. Do you remember where you were? You know, where was I?
When a black man was voted
back into
office.
Yeah, with high unemployment. I mean, that's how bad. Where was that headline? Republicans search for answers about what went wrong in the election. You have an African-American president, high unemployment. The people don't have great confidence that the economy is going to be fixed. What else did he have, did Romney have going for him? Oh, yeah, he had the backing of all these billionaires that put in hundreds of millions of dollars, and he still loses. So they've got all sorts of
excuses. I thought you said, did you say Romney or Obama?
I don't know.
Meant Romney.
I meant Romney.
Okay.
Right. Absolutely. One of the things, and the most really distasteful things, was there's this, again, I'm not going to give, let me start by saying this. You know, I've said before, I cannot stand to listen to the sound of these right-wingers' voices on, like, Fox News and these, talk show hosts like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity.
Oh, I'm with you.
Hey, should we tell people that they can call in at 313-298-WRIF?
313-298-9743. You can also email us at calltalkyes@yahoo.com.
Yeah, right. We have a Facebook page as well, facebook.com/nightcall. And John is ready to take your calls, like to know what you thought of all this. I mean, there was a couple of people that, here, let me get this up. One guy, because I posted, and this is all me. So, you know, you don't have to... can't blame WRIF. You can't blame Jalene. It's me. And I put that on the website. Where did that just disappear?
Can't blame Obama.
Yeah. Yeah, I put on there, bye-bye, Willard. That's Mitt's real first name.
Yeah.
White Christian Nationalist Party loses. Ding-dong, the wicked witch is dead. Or, as we say around here, adios, MF.
See you later.
Yeah, so here... what happened? Did they take off his comment? No, this guy Len writes in that, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, here. I thought I knew hate from people. damn, this is some Hitler KK style hate. This is what I wrote.
They're saying about us. By the way, I think I just hung up on someone. So call back. Oh, I'm
okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. So say this again.
So
this is on our Facebook page.
Len writes, whew, and I thought I knew hate from people. Damn, this is some Hitler KK style.
Yeah. Do you think he was talking about us?
Yeah. Yeah, he's talking about what I just wrote about Ding Dong the Wicked Witch is dead and adios MF and all that.
That's, wow,
yeah.
Okay.
So he said,
we just like to say how we feel, man.
Well, get this. Good Allah, you people are so full of hate.
Wow.
Yeah. Hate gets you no place, and I didn't vote for Obama, but damn, I don't hate the man. I don't hate Romney. I'm just glad he...
I loathe him.
I'm glad he's out of there. Well, here is one of the things that happened. That in this right-wing website, it says, electoral maps results indicate deepening racial divide among voters. And what it meant was Hispanics, African-Americans, Native Americans who voted in larger numbers mm-hmm. than in a long time, and Asian Americans all voted overwhelmingly for Barack Obama.
And yeah, you know, the Native Americans probably thought with all this immigration stuff that that Romney would send them back to, oh, wait, this is their country. That's right. That's right, I forgot.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, get
damn
this.
White people.
God. excuse me, folks. Based on, this is what it says here. Get this. It says, Obama failed to capture the majority of white vote in many of the nation's states, even ones that traditionally bleed blue, and endured a 4% drop among white voters over 2008, which is true, but he was back where, like, Kerry and Gore were.
It's so long ago.
Yeah, I can't even remember. Based on racial exit poll data available from select states, Obama would have definitely lost 12 states' Republican nominee Mitt Romney if only white votes mattered. I mean, can you believe what these right-wingers are writing?
I really can't. You know, it's stunning.
And another three possible toss-up states, and that's a full 242 possible electoral votes that Obama would not have. So if it wasn't for those darn colored people, that Romney would have won.
Can you believe that?
I mean, I wonder if they're thinking of some way they could stop him from voting. Oh, yeah, they tried didn't they? Used to do that.
Every election.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things here in the opening line is 2008 minority voters turned out in record numbers, propelling Barack Obama to the White House, and similar results fueled his second-term victory on Tuesday. You know what? These are not the people of African-American origin, Hispanic origin, Asian-American origin, and Native American origin. They're not minority voters. You know what they are?
Human beings.
They are American voters.
Thank you.
You know, and you know, I mean, I think everybody uses that phrase, minority, but,
I am one, and I don't like being called that.
You're a minority?
Yeah. Women and minorities were in the same thing.
Oh, but women are now the majority.
Well.
We're the minority. Anyway.
You know what I'm saying.
Everyone uses that to refer to people of color, which is, this is spotted. This is like, a colored spot in a white background, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so all the fear is among people to whom that matters, this is a threatening state of affairs. But the phrase minority is used by almost everybody. I mean, liberals who use it. But I think it's an awful phrase.
I do too.
I mean, it's disparaging.
How does that feel?
Yeah. I mean, because
be categorized.
These are our friends, our neighbors, our coworkers, and I don't know. We got to get that out of our lexicon.
But the question is how. These people are so, I think they're ill. I really do. I think there's...
They're going to die off eventually.
There's some psychosis going on.
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, if you think about it, too, if you're of an Irish background, Italian, Jewish, Southern European or Eastern European, when your ancestors came over here, they were not appreciated by these same people. They thought, man, Irish, and, you know, they're following the Pope, and, you know, the thing about the Italians. In a lot of areas, Italians were thought to be equal with African-Americans, actually.
Yeah, it's the Catholic thing.
Well, yeah, and in the 1920s in Detroit, where the people, what they called the ethnics, which were the Irish and Italians and people like that, lived on
Polish.
The East. Polish. I'm sorry, yeah, that's the Eastern European, a lot of Polish. And those were thought to be not the real Americans, because the real Americans lived on the west side of Detroit, whose politics were actually dominated by the Ku Klux Klan in Detroit, in Michigan, and they actually elected a Ku Klux Klan mayor in like 1929, 1930, something like that.
Wow.
And I hate to say it, they actually cheated him out of being seated. You know what I mean? I mean, the politicians pulled some shenanigans and kept the Klan Detroit mayor from actually taking office. But that's how strong the resentment was.
That's fine.
To minority voters, which were Irish and Italian and Slavic and Polish and Greek and, you know, Jewish.
But when it comes to someone who would like to lynch an entire population, you know what? See you later, MF, again.
Yeah. And by the way, speaking of, where is my thing? Speaking of Jewish voters, it was a bad day for all these super donors, particularly Sheldon Adelson.
He's a very, very wealthy man.
That's made all his money by getting people to gamble at his casinos here and in Macau, I think. He gave the Republican Party $53 million. And one of the things he was concerned about is he wanted to turn the Jewish vote around. And from exit polls, they think that Obama got 70% of the Jewish vote.
So, really?
Yeah. Everyone he backed, all the senators, all this insane Alan West congressman, the New Jersey Senate, the House in New Jersey. He backed Newt Gingrich and all this stuff. He lost every single guy.
And you know what, Peter? For all of those people out there who say that Obama hates Israel, you know, nothing could be further from the truth. He's in there with them, just like a lot of the presidents are, but most of them. And, you know, so just put that out of your head. And so if 70% of the Jewish population voted for Obama, then that says a whole lot.
Yeah. Adelson did score one point with his $2 million contribution that helped sink a Michigan ballot initiative seeking to enshrine collective bargaining in the state's constitution. Mm-hmm. Adelson runs the only non-union casino on the Las Vegas Strip.
Oh, well, go figure. That's just everything about him is right in line.
None of there was good news and bad news. The emergency manager law lost, so that's out of here now. Yeah. I mean that was.
Whew.
Yeah. The
collective bargaining is not going to be protected.
Lost. The healthcare workers one lost, and the green energy lost. I talked to some people. They said, you know what? This is not what a state constitution is for. Like, the state constitution bans gay marriage.
Yeah.
Right? That should be legislative. Not that, I'm not saying it should be legislative. They can't.
At all.
Yeah. But yeah.
Or until the point where it's allowed.
And then on the other hand, those two amendments by Matty Maroon that would have made taxation difficult, and he would have been able to have his own bridge. Those lost.
Doesn't everybody want their own bridge?
Yeah, and he spent like what, $36 million.
God.
You know, one of the things about this thing with this amendment with for labor that would have enshrined collective bargaining in the Michigan Constitution. You know, consultants make so much money, right? I should be a consultant, because if they would have asked me, I would have said, do not put this on the ballot. It is a loser, because there's all these people that don't want stuff like that.
And some of the anti-union folks.
But not even that. But the fact that people don't want the Constitution changed for, you know, individual issues like that. And then there is the huge party of resentment that resents the kind of wages that union people have gotten, A, for themselves, and B, for everybody else, including people that dislike them.
That they deserve!
Yeah. Hey, you know, the Republicans say, the People's House remains in, you know, overwhelmingly in the hands of the white Christian Nationalist Party, right? But do you know what? Is that the total vote for the House of Representatives, there are 2 million more people voted for the Democratic representatives than voted for the Republicans.
Oh.
But the way they've got it all
districted
that, you got to have this enormous number of Democratic votes in order to have have a majority.
Mm-hmm.
Well, both individually and in the House as well.
Mm.
Well, I'd like to hear what you have to say as well.
We have full lines right now.
Yeah, I'm going to get to them in a second. Oh, it was good that the teabagger mayor of Troy, Michigan got bounced
Bye-bye.
Out.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Janice.
Bye-bye, Daniel. You crazy lady.
She was
I mean,
crazy.
I'm not afraid to say it. I'm going to be nice and not throw in the rest of what we usually do. I'm right. Just going to say bye-bye, you homophobic, crazy lady.
Yep.
Thank you, Troy.
And there was a lot of fascist fury going on at the University of Mississippi, Ole Miss. There was this...
There was a riot.
And these kids are screaming racial epithets.
Obama got in.
Because of the night of the election. Next night, they had 700 people in the candlelight parade calling for respect. And
respecting everyone.
Yeah, yeah. So that's good. And so there's been all of these reactions immediately. Gun sales have just shot up.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, because Obama's a gun grabber.
You know, and he's, you know.
So I'm going to buy nine more guns so he can grab those as well.
It's just not true. I mean, we say it all the time on this show, but I think it's so important to say it every time, Peter.
What? Why are you going to buy guns if he's going to grab them?
But no, just to remind people that he's not doing that.
Yeah.
Okay?
You know,
real quick, got an email from Cody and said, idea. You should ask for Republican callers to call in and explain why Romney didn't win. I have my popcorn already.
That's good.
Thanks, Cody.
That's good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I started to say earlier, and I've never finished the thought, that I can't listen to Fox News or Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity. Rush Limbaugh had the highest listenership he's had probably in 20 years because everybody tuned in to hear what he would say. It was wonderful. For one thing, he couldn't put one word after another. He kept like that. And he was just whining and calling names. So when that's one of the things that the Republicans have done. They were absolutely disdainful of the people that voted for Obama. Insultingly. I mean, we say, I don't know why the majority of people vote for him, but would vote for Romney. But, I mean, that's, I think, incredibly different thing.
It was 2 million difference in that popular vote right there. I'm surprised it was...
That close?
Yeah,
well, I think that hundreds of millions of dollars that the billionaires put in because they knew that it was an investment that Romney would give them a great return on their investment.
Yeah.
Wealthy
people want to hang on to their wealth.
Why do they, though? I mean, if you have billions...
You can't go backwards when you have that. You have to pay for all those things, and you need more things. What do you mean, Peter?
But they got all the things. You know, that's what...
There's always new things.
What's that guy? Bill O'Reilly said, oh, yeah, you know, Obama got everybody that wants stuff, that wants things, and I heard, what's his name? He looks like somebody, one of the elves out of Harry Potter.
You always do this. Wolf?
No. The guy, he does too. No, the guy's married to Mary Madeline.
Oh, James Carville.
James Carville.
Oh, yeah, he's very elfin.
Yeah, he says, I saw him on Bill Maher, and he's saying, what, the Koch brothers don't want stuff? You know, Exxon doesn't want stuff?
Right.
You know, like that, right?
Yeah.
A group in Louisiana has beginning to circulate a petition asking for secession. They want to secede from the United States.
See you later.
Yeah, that's what I say. Adios,
bye, MF.
Yeah, except they can't take New Orleans.
And no.
So here's what I'm saying.
It's too cool.
Let all the slave states go, right? We can have a little... population transfer.
You know what? I would go for that wall, the fence.
But and what could happen with New Orleans? That could become what they call a free city state. Like they used to have, like Singapore. They had in Europe Danzig, which is now the Polish city of Gdansk. But actually, my wife's my mother-in-law, she had a passport. You ever see that on the wall? It's framed, and it's you never saw that?
I can't believe I've been in your house 8 million times.
Yeah, I have to show it. It's a passport from Danzig, which no longer exists. She never became a citizen. And so when they used to have to file every year, as an alien, they put citizen of what country? And she'd put none.
Really?
Whoa, yeah, quite
wow! Now I know where your wife gets her feistiness.
Yes. So anyway, I say let the slave states go because one of the things is they're costing us a ton. All of you know that, right? I mean, here are all these Republicans being so disparaging about the people in the blue state, and you know they really mean, right? And yet, we in these blue states, we pay out more in federal taxes than we get back from the federal government. And almost every one of those red states, the Republican states, they take in more than they give to the federal treasury.
Truth. And you can't argue with facts. We're not just making this up, folks.
So let those suckers go and let's see what they can do on their own without the federal government.
That sounds good to me.
Here, from Terry. Terry wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I'm excited to listen to the show after President Obama's victory. She wrote this a day or two ago. I was wondering if you could explain why the conservatives and all the other Obama haters call him a socialist and a communist.
Terry, that's such a great question.
Yeah, well, they're just really dumb.
It's really simple.
They don't know their ass from their elbow. I mean, that's all.
It's ignorance.
You'll hear my guest, Thomas Frank, who wrote the book, What's the Matter with Kansas, at 1 a.m. today. He says what I've often said, that in Europe, or even in Canada, probably, is that Barack Obama would be a center-rightist. He wouldn't even be a center-left.
Yep.
You know, like people like me and what I advocate, and if I can include you in that, Julian,
of course,
would be on the left in any European or Canadian European country. I mean, we'd kick him out of our left-wing party.
Yeah, he would be way too far right for us.
Much too
conservative. So socialist, communist, oh, please.
Yeah. It seems, at least from, she says, what I've seen on social media, that the hatred for him is really getting worse. Well, it is true. They're going into a fascist froth.
And, and people are becoming less afraid to show their racism.
Yeah, well, they got the internet.
Yeah, true. They can hide behind
when you have people like Donald Trump on your side, how in the world can you expect to win? Yeah, because he started tweeting, and one of the things, I don't know if this is on here, he was tweeting about Karl Rove, the guy that was running the Romney campaign, and wouldn't believe that he lost because
Karl Rove, who ran Bush.
He was Bush's brain because, you know, Bush didn't have one.
Which is a book.
Yeah, the name of the book, too. And so he said Trump called the Electoral College. Here, though, I agree with him. The Electoral College, a disaster for a democracy, a total sham and a travesty. Well, it's not a total sham and a travesty. Well, yeah, I mean, when you have something like 2000 where the winner of the popular vote doesn't become the president.
Right.
So, yeah, that's one of the things. Certainly we should eliminate the Electoral College. We should shorten the campaigns. I don't know, could you do that by law? You got to lengthen the voting period instead of all this insanity. I mean,
a national holiday.
National holiday. Some of these people were waiting in line 5 to 7 hours. I mean, 200 years and they can't get it right?
I can't imagine. The 45 that I waited was semi-excruciating. The only reason it wasn't was because I had my best friend with me.
There you go. And so Trump, he's sending out tweets, we should have a revolution in this country. And then he sent another, more votes equals a loss. See, this is what I said, too. The Republicans do not want a lot of people voting. They want it I'm sure, like when this country
limited
began.
Limited voting.
Yeah. Who would vote? Let's see. How about white propertied males?
Yeah, businessmen, perhaps.
Yeah, because they know what's best, right? Because they create these wonderful situations like the recession. Yeah. But here, you can't have the majority making decisions. And when you start having a Democratic election, and the ruling class doesn't like it, and they start calling for a revolution, they're calling for a fascist coup. And you got to remember that Obama, the hatred for him on the right, his match is not just racial. I mean, that's a little pointed, but mostly it comes because the politics they view him as representing, because there was that same extreme hatred for Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
Who put in the minimum wage, who put in the right to
and this
union
healthcare thing's a biggie to these folks on the right.
Yeah.
And in a positive way for those of us who don't have health care.
Yeah, so guess what, folks? We got a national health care program. But
2014, baby.
Could that mean, though, that this is going to be a disaster for the economy? That's what the right-wingers are saying. I'll be back just in a minute.
And to get your calls.
And to get your calls.
Stay on hold.
So
we'll
stay on the line. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Hey, dog, where's your owner?
Watching Netflix.
Yeah?
He can instantly watch as many TV episodes and movies as he wants online.
Well, I know what you did on my lawn, and it's not funny.
It is to kids.
Well, what are their parents supposed to laugh at?
The sophisticated jokes. You know, like, that dog chasing his tail reminds me of politicians.
Oh. Instantly watch as many TV episodes and movies as your family wants on all kinds of devices for only $8 a month with Netflix. Start your free trial today. See terms of use.
How would you like to see customers through your door today, and the next day, and the day after that? I have the answer you're looking for. RiffDeals.com. Hey, you're online now. Just click on the banner in the player window to find out more. Remember, there's no upfront cost to you. It's a partnership, with your success as the goal. WRAF's marketing pros work with you to develop the perfect deal. Then, RiffDeals.com uses the power of on-air, online, and social media marketing to help you reach new customers. Oh, did I mention that you get a check within 10 days of your successful deal running? That's cash in your pocket and customers in the door.
And now Geico presents 30 Seconds with Maxwell the Pig.
Hey everyone, I'm Maxwell, and my life is kind of awesome because whenever Geico wants to talk about their new mobile app, they're like, hey Maxwell, you feel like coming to the studio and talking about how the app lets you manage your policy, you know, and get roadside help and even customize it with your favorite Geico character? And I'm like, maybe. Are there going to be snacks?
Everything you love about Geico, now mobile. Download the new Geico app today.
It's Mike Rowe here at a Ford dealer with a little Q&A for Fiona. According to the signs, Ford is having some sort of big tire event. How would you describe the event?
It's big.
The savings one might enjoy at the event.
They're big.
What about the selection?
Big.
Get a $60 mail-in rebate on four select tires. Use the Ford service credit card for an additional $60. Click on the banner ad.
So I think we can agree then that Ford's tire event is good sized.
No, Michael. It's big.
Subject to credit approval, rebate by check. Offer cannot be combined. See participating Ford dealer for rebate details by 11/30/12.
If you've ever wanted to design your own ring, there's only one place to go.
That's Jared!
At Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry, it's easy to create a ring that's yours and yours alone. First, choose from hundreds of beautiful settings. Then select from thousands of loose diamonds, including the spectacular Leo Artisan Diamond, independently certified to be visibly brighter and available exclusively at Jared.
It can only be Jared!
Find a Jared store or shop anytime at Jared.com.
This is 101 WRIF. Thanks for rocking with us online at WRIF.com.
Midnight, if I can do the dawn, loving.
Longest Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. And guess what we're talking about? The election. And Jalene and I, of course, are delighted that the White Christian Nationalist Party, otherwise known as the Republicans, lost bad. And they are probably going to be history, although who knows? That's what people thought in 08. And very possibly what will happen is that everyone will kind of go, okay, we took care of that. And then about a third of the population votes in the off-year elections. And, you know, these guys haven't given up.
Oh, that's no. Sure. That, yeah, we're talking. No one gives up.
And there are, I said I was going to talk about what the Republicans said about the election of Obama and Obamacare hurting the economy. But let's get some callers on the air. You guys have been waiting a long time. Is it all guys? It is all guys. We also welcome women. Republicans say that
of course we do.
Yeah, I know. That the loss was due to the liberal media. Of course, they were always disparaging the Democratic voters. They said they had a bad candidate, and they had, you know, a bunch of other excuses as well. Oh, yeah. Carol Rove said that Obama was suppressing votes.
I mean, where is he? This guy's pulling it out of all kinds of orifices.
Yeah, well,
point.
He said because of the negative ads that the Obama campaign.
Oh, there were none on the other side. What a joke.
All right, let's get some of these folks on.
Sorry,
this is amazing. Here's Alex in Livonia. He's a Republican. He says he's glad that Mitt lost. Alex, you're on the air. What's up?
Yeah, first of all, it's cool to be on your guys' show, so thanks for that.
Well, it's cool to have you here. I mean that.
All right, awesome. Well, I'm more of a libertarian Republican, and so for me, I don't have anything against gay marriage. I want pot to be legalized, and also I want abortion to be legal, and I see this election...
Which it is. You don't want it to be illegal. Yeah.
Right, to remain it. Yeah.
Did I misspeak there?
No, you didn't. Okay, You're right.
Yeah, so... I see this election kind of as like the death of conservatism, and maybe hopefully in 2016 we'll get someone who's more libertarian on the, you know, GOP ticket preaching more of a universal message and not a message that just appeals to WASPs who want to impose their moral law on the rest of us.
Well, I hear you, Alex, but who is there? I mean, Ron Paul is going to be way too old to run again.
But plus, he had a lot of followers, but it just is not enough. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, the money wasn't there. They were all going for the other guys. Yeah, but there was a libertarian in this building who didn't even vote. He said there's no choice. Although there was a Libertarian Party, I'm surprised he didn't vote for them. But
well,
maybe he just didn't want to go stand in those lines.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. Okay. We'll see what'll happen, whether that philosophy will have any legs. Thank you, Alex. Appreciate your call. Here is Chris. Chris is in Memphis, but not Tennessee. Memphis, Michigan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's going good. Thanks for calling in.
I listened to you guys for about a past year now, first time calling in. I do enjoy your program.
Thank you. Welcome.
I am a white Christian Republican.
Okay.
I listen to you guys for the other side. I like to keep informed on both sides.
It's hard to
do
on radio.
Your guys' input.
Right?
What's that?
It's hard to do on radio because 99% of radio talk shows that are political are on the right. So you found the one local link anyway.
Correct. Well, most people don't listen to radio talk shows anymore, especially on a Sunday night. I am actually within...
Passive-aggressive much?
I'm actually within Obama's demographic. I'm laid off partway through the NAFTA agreement. I am going back to school, seeking jobs. I got some food stamps coming in for my family, not enough to cover more than a week of food. But it's stum, and I'm very appreciative for it. So I'm actually within his demographic, and I'm here to tell you, yeah, Mitt Romney was, I voted for him still, but he was not going to make it. I called it 2 months ago that Obama was going to win. And
why in the world would you vote for this 1%?
He was dogging everything that you just told us. He was dogging you the whole way through his campaign.
You're the 47%.
I'm not saying that I didn't disagree with him. I just... No, you just sometimes I've never been wrong. I've been voting since 1996 since I was first able
to.
Yeah,
but why would you vote for Mitt Romney when he was saying derogatory things about you because you are relying on government assistance to get by right now? You're unemployed. You're with that part of that 47% that he was talking about. Do you remember that?
I do not want to stay on government assistance. That's the difference.
Well, who wants to, really?
It's called, you know what it's called? A safety net. Think circus when the trapeze artists fall. You want a safety net there. And when you have a country like ours, it's the wealthiest country in the world, yet has so many poor people, so many near poor people, so many people struggling, that you have the economy is all fixed. It's okay. Just because, you know, you, Chris, and other people don't have a job, the people at the top don't think that means the economy is broken. You're just an unemployment statistic. And there is nothing that Mitt Romney had in mind that was going to get you a job, huh?
Well, I don't hear anybody saying anything that's going to get me a job. But
well, there is, you know what? I have to say, there is some truth to that. I think that if Mitt Romney would have been elected, things would have gotten significantly worse. Do I think that we're going to enter this period of great prosperity with terrific paying jobs and all that?
No one can do that right now.
Well, I don't
care who you are.
Well, I think it's possible to do that, but that would mean an alteration of this country's economy and its politics in a manner that Barack Obama and the Democratic Party is not going
to
do.
But there's so much to
all
be repaired.
Chris, thank you.
The time is really the factor at this point. I'm one of the
what
factors.
What do you mean repaired?
From what George W. Bush did.
Yeah.
8 years of Bush and false wars and a war economy.
Here, what I was going to say, I dislike the title of Barack Obama's book so much. We've talked about the audacity of hope. It's not very audacious to hope at all. What's audacious to do is do.
Is to do something about it.
And here's what's happening. Everybody across the political spectrum hopes. They hope that Mitt Romney will, you fill in the blanks for what you want. People hope that Barack Obama will fill in the blanks for what you want. What one has to do is to do, for instance, what the Occupy movement did. What, I hate to say it, what the teabaggers did. They began to move. To show up to alter history, alter this society, alter the politics and the philosophy in terms of what they think is best for them and where they're situated. I mean, the teabaggers, of course, they're just carrying water for the billionaires who essentially funded their movement. But if things are just left to us hoping that Barack Obama is going to find people good-paying jobs, forget it. This is going to be the new normal. The economy is back on track. All the rich guys are getting great returns on their investment. The companies are making profits again. And they're still shedding jobs a lot, too, because they figure, hey, you know, we can just get everybody to work more and harder and faster and
for
what
less
have you. For less. And so there's not going to be any more jobs because there's not going to be a demand for more things to buy, more stuff to buy, because people aren't going to have enough money. So if we give money to the job creators who don't really create jobs anymore at all it'll do is give them more money, and they'll be able to try to buy more elections.
That pretty much sums it up.
If you care about your future, and I know this is a tough one, if you've never had any experience in this, or you don't know where to go or who to talk to or whatever, is you've got to start making history the way the revolutionaries at the beginning of this country did, the abolitionists, the suffragettes, the anti-war movements, the union movement.
We're supposed to be more advanced and know more now. I mean, think about how long ago that was.
Common people made history, and then the politicians ran around, you know, they would say, oh, I got to get in front of this. You know, there's an old, you ever seen that bumper sticker said, if the people lead, the politicians will follow. And right now, Barack Obama is president. That's very good. It would have been disastrous to have Mitt Romney in. Mm-hmm. Women's rights would have suffered. The economy would have gotten much worse. The spread between income wealth disparity would have increased, and on and on and on. Right? It's good that Barack Obama defeated the Republican Party, and they took such a bath everywhere on so many issues and in so many venues. But that's not enough. And if you're just going to sit around and hope that Barack Obama is going to do this or that, Well, you can just do it. And you can hope that it doesn't rain next time you have a picnic. And you can hope that you get good results next time you take a test at the doctor. But what you're essentially doing is saying, I have no control over my current status or the future. And you know what? If you're all at home by yourself listening to us right now, you don't. There's nothing an individual can do. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to say you're powerless, but we have power in the aggregate.
And absolutely.
And that means your neighbors, your church, because a lot of, you know, I was calling the Republican Party the White Christian Nationalist Party, just to be disparaging of them. But great numbers of Christians, every Christian I know voted for Obama. Right?
Yeah.
Every Jew I know voted for Obama.
I can't say every single one. I know more Republicans than you do.
Yeah, I know.
You know, you can really take that whole concept that you just laid out, Peter, and put it in your own life. It's like someone expecting, things to come to them, for all of these great things to happen in their life without actually putting any effort into it at all. Usually that's not the way it is.
Yep. Let's get some more calls. Peter Werbe and Jalene Jordan, you're listening to Night Call. Here's Andy in Oxford. Andy, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey, Andy.
What's up?
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thanks for your patience. Go ahead.
Hey, I just want to make a couple of comments. You know, you were talking about the libertarian, they didn't want to vote. And you know, I can definitely tell you that on my ballot, there was quite a few different candidates with, like, the Green Party, and I think the Natural Law Party?
Yep. Yeah.
But the Libertarian, Gary Johnson, wasn't there, so I wrote him in, you know. But I'm proud of, the locals getting together and voting and doing, making some headway, because what they did in, like, Flint, Detroit.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Flint. Tell us about that, Andy. I forgot to mention that. Go ahead.
Well, you know, there's some change going on. You know, they did some marijuana, enforcement issues. And I think that's like a big issue in the cities, because what you have is a lot of people that don't have jobs that are turned into things that are going to be profitable for them. And even organized crime units and people out there that are, basically supply and demand. And I can tell you, as a medical marijuana patient, you see stuff and you're like, wow, that's not local. That's not from around here, And like, there's a lot of people standing on corners, peddling and doing things like that.
Well, now Detroit and Flint.
The mafia's back? I missed this memo.
Detroit and Flint have legalized marijuana, took a vote, and so it is. All right, Andy, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. And let's see, here is Casey. Casey is in Royal Oak. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Peter and Jolene?
Hey, good. What's
been
up?
Been quite a while since I talked to you, Peter.
Okay.
Too many years. That was back before you even had a partner on the radio. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've been a silent partner for a long time, but yeah. 6 years.
Oh, yeah, it was well before that. And I always enjoy Sunday, and I still enjoy talk radio, even though your other caller doesn't think people listen.
That was called passive aggressive.
Yeah, there's like,
exactly.
I know. Let's call it what it is.
And I'm sure your advertisers don't want to hear that either, but there are people out there. They just don't call in. But
No, we know.
This show's been on the air for 42 years,
Yeah.
Enough said.
Yep.
So it ain't going anywhere. And it's just ironic you were talking a little bit of histrionics of Detroit. I'm right across from the Shrine of the Little Flower, built by that hate monger and racist anti-Semite Father Coughlin. Basically,
we get those the lovely abortion crosses a couple times a year. It's just such a lovely sight.
Yeah.
Well, and it was built by the Rush Limbaugh of the day, And I did listen to Rush, but I think you guys are being a little optimistic, but also small-minded. I just look at it that this is the land of opportunity, but now it's the land of second opportunities, because people don't necessarily have to vote race, because I don't think race was as big a part as a lot of people want to make it, and I don't want to use it as an excuse.
So you must be white. Let me guess. You're white, right?
I could be.
Yeah, okay.
All right, but the whole thing is, you got to look at, like, I look at it like a Polaroid negative, all right? You flip it around, all right? Like the Rodney King situation. Your results, the results are of the actions you take, okay? Mm-hmm. Rodney King could have been white, beat up by 5 black officers, and the whole thing is, He resisted arrest after fleeing. Okay.
Wait a minute. We're going to talk about Rodney King.
What?
KC.
Okay, the fact is, he wasn't white.
Yeah.
Okay. He was black, and he got the holy crap beat out of him.
Which is very typical for the LA cops and the
ghetto. I mean, even to say that, you're just making up. I mean, that's just wasted.
It is wasted
racism.
See ya. By the way, one of the things I was going to talk about, now the right wing is all about, because now Obamacare is in. We are not going to get rid of it at all. And it's going to be part of, hopefully, an expanding full government medical program for everyone, essentially Medicare for everyone, in the manner that every other industrial country in the world has. Now, the right wing is immediately going on this campaign saying that companies plan massive layoffs since Obamacare is now a reality. And there's a list of all these companies, all of who are saying that they're
fast food places
laying off people. Well, not all of them either. A number of them are. But like the medical device manufacturer, Stryker, Boston Scientific, Welsh Allen manufacturers. What is this? They're all medical companies. But first off, I didn't get a chance to really look deeply into this. Oftentimes, companies use any number of reasons to lay off people. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And because, again, it's what we said earlier, they get you to work longer, faster, harder for lower wages.
Yeah.
So this could be the opportunity they're looking forward to. But I don't understand why other countries in the world that aren't anywhere near as wealthy as the United States, why they can have full single payer government health care
and
the United States can't.
Yeah.
Well, there's a couple of things. One, they may have to take a smaller return on their investment in order to that human beings, including their employees and other people in this country, in the country in which they live, even if they provide it for their employees, don't have to wonder. I mean, we just talked to somebody here that was in the hospital for 3 days without medical insurance. They owe $12,000,
yeah.
Young person,
right.
Early or mid-20s. Yeah. Like that. And you got to remember that the first thing that Romney said he was going to do, first act, he was going to attack health care. He was going to repeal
Obamacare.
And the next thing is to stop money going to Planned Parenthood. So women that depend on Planned Parenthood for everything, from mammograms and cervical cancer examinations.
Yeah.
These people they're just heartless. I mean, they're
completely heartless.
Completely heartless, yeah. All right, we got time for a call or two
not
more.
Not president.
Not president. Yeah, yeah. How sweet it is. Here's Pete in Farmington. Pete, it's Pete. How you doing? Angeline, you're on the air. Sorry. Go ahead, Pete. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. I talked to you last month when someone was going about Reagan. I kind of took the whole Reagan is awesome thing apart.
Yeah.
Anyway, as far as the election goes, when CNN first projected Ohio for Obama, I was pretty happy. And as far as what it means for the Republican Party, I guess you got to look at, guys like me, my demographic. You know, I'm 31, I'm white, I did 2 tours in Iraq. You know, I don't buy into partisan stuff. I should be Romney's target demographic, right? I should be Republican. I'm not.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, why?
Because Republicans have encouraged so much rampant extremism in their own party, it's completely unpalatable to ever vote for, Republican. They've lost my vote for life. They've encouraged racism. They've said that they don't believe in evolution. They don't believe in, which that one just boggles my mind. I mean, they talk about how you should be tough on crime, yet we get convictions from DNA evidence.
You know what, Pete? They also sent you off to a war that was based on lies.
Well,
that's a little item there. Yeah.
No, that's very true. But in my case, I never believed in Iraq anyways, but I signed up after we went because I had an opinion about it, and I thought, well, I can have an opinion about it, or I can go find out for myself and then say what I believe, right?
Okay.
So I went anyways. Plus, to me, there was also a bigger thing. Like, once we were sent, it's kind of like, as the Army, you have to say, well, it doesn't matter if what we get sent to do is wrong or not because we have civilian leadership. If we say, oh, hey, no, we're going to quit now, that tells every other potential enemy in the rest of the world that all they have to do is make something unpleasant enough, and that we, the Army, will quit. That will let you guys fend for yourselves.
Well, listen, any hierarchical organization that's not democratic where the people involved don't get to make decisions, which is almost everything from the police and the army to any company or anything like that, you pretty much have to do what you're told or that there's extreme consequences. I mean, people, there were a handful of men who refused orders and what have you, wouldn't go back for second tours because of their objection to the war.
Right.
And, of course, you know, they were prosecuted. All right, Pete, glad you're back. Glad you're...
Well, they're hiding in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're glad you're back and we're glad you're safe.
All right, thank you. We got to go to a break. We'll be right back. Hey, we're going to play a little clip from Rachel Maddow when
and
we come back.
We'll
get, your calls.
Get your calls.
And I was thinking, too, go back to the Romney concession speech, and I had the strangest sense of it all.
Mm.
More when we come back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Inhabitants of Earth, you can run, but you cannot... What are you doing?
I'm watching Netflix on my smartphone, dude.
What?
I can instantly watch as many TV episodes and movies as I want.
You don't fear for your life?
Yeah, not really. Our atmosphere is eventually going to kill you anyway.
Nonsense. Our anatomy is...
There you go. Faster than I thought.
Instantly watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on all kinds of devices for only $8 a month with Netflix. Start your free trial today. See terms of use.
In case you haven't heard, Esurance is built to save you money on car insurance. You know, cash, or clams, or greenbacks, sawbucks, simoleons, smack, chips, or scratch. That's insurance for the modern world. Esurance. Click or call.
Not available in all states. Savings may vary.
Mike Rowe here at a Ford dealer with a little Q&A for Fiona. According to the signs, Ford is having some sort of big tire event. How would you describe the event?
It's big.
The savings one might enjoy at the event.
They're big.
What about the selection?
Big.
Get a $60 mail-in rebate on 4 select tires. Use the Ford service credit card for an additional $60. Click on the banner ad.
So I think we can agree then that Ford's tire event is good sized.
No, Michael. It's big.
Subject to credit approval, rebate by check. Offer cannot be combined. See participating Ford dealer for rebate details by 11/30/12.
WRIF and WRIF HD1
Detroit.
Three doors down.
December 5th.
The Fox Theater. And The Riff has your chance to sit in the front row. Details online at WRIF.com.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
Thank you very much, and welcome back to our second hour at 1 a.m. We're going to be talking with Thomas Frank, the author of What's the Matter with Kansas, his observation about the election, and we're very interested in what your opinion was, what happened, what went down. We're extraordinarily happy, mm-hmm. and, you know, I just feel like we haven't touched on so many things. And Rachel Maddow on MSNBC, she had a, in fact, it's on my website if you want to go to it, Peter Werby, WERBE.com, or on our Facebook page, Facebook.com/Night Call. Here's just a
We're
little
play a short clip
from Rachel Maddow, and she's saying essentially what we have been saved from. Let's see if this is going to work for us. Let's see here.
That happened. That really happened. We are not going to have a Supreme Court that will overturn Roe versus Wade. There will be no more Antonin Scalia's and Samuel Alito's added to this court. We're not going to repeal health reform. Nobody is going to kill Medicare and make old people in this generation or any other generation fight it out on the open market to try to get themselves health insurance. We are not going to do that. We're not going to give a 20% tax cut to millionaires and billionaires and expect programs like food stamps and kids' health insurance to cover the cost of that tax cut. We're not going to make you clear it with your boss if you want to get birth control under the insurance plan that you're on. We are not going to redefine rape. We are not going to amend the United States Constitution to stop gay people from getting married. We are not going to double Guantanamo. We are not eliminating the Department of Energy or the Department of Education or housing at the federal level. We're not going to spend $2 trillion on the military that the military does not want. We are not scaling back on student loans because the country's new plan is that you should borrow money from your parents We are not vetoing the Dream Act. We are not self-deporting. We are not letting Detroit go bankrupt. We are not starting a trade war with China on Inauguration Day in January. We are not going to have, as a president, a man who once led a mob of friends to run down a scared gay kid to hold him down and forcibly cut his hair off with a pair of scissors while that kid cried and screamed for help. And there was no apology, not ever. We are not going to have a Secretary of State John Bolton. We are not bringing Dick Cheney back. We are not going to have a foreign policy shop stocked with architects of the Iraq War. We are not going to do it. We had the choice to do that if we wanted to do that as a country. And we said no last night, loudly.
Yeah, indeed. That was Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. They kind of summed it up. That's what we would have been facing. And she said what we are not going to have. So it was very important that the Romney Republican Party was defeated. But there's got to be more. Right now, things will probably just dribble along, drift along as they have. What we have now could very easily become the new normal. And because, you know, the Republicans, they don't give up. They're still going to attempt to block any kind of even the mild reforms that Barack Obama would suggest. So it's up to us. And if you have no ideas on how you can be part of the us to make your desires, or actually desires aren't is even the word, the necessities of you and your community and family, what we need to have a life that is not filled with the stress about, are we going to have a job? How come?
Or a house
or medical care or what have you. We've got to intervene on our own for that. Okay, let's, I was going to say about
the... people shouldn't have to worry where their next meal's coming from.
Exactly. I wanted to just say, too, when I was watching the television, they showed the Romney crowd in Boston. And as I said earlier, why in the world in Boston, which a state that rejected him so fully.
Handily.
Maybe he should have come to Michigan. Oh, no, they did that,
too. Wait, he dogged us pretty bad.
But you know what it looked like? It looked just like the times that I've been in the swanky Townsend Hotel in Birmingham.
Uh-huh, been there.
Been there, right?
Well, I grew up in that, you know, the country club.
Right? Yeah, well, I didn't. But so I, you know.
Lovey.
I've been, and then they showed Chicago. And there it was, the rainbow, all of us, every color,
That's, I prefer that. I just prefer that. Thank
and
you.
And that's what the Republicans are so disparaging of.
Yeah.
Diversity.
They, it makes them uncomfortable.
You know, here's
not all Republicans, but a lot of these white folk.
Right. Well, it's, okay, we'll leave it. Let's get back to our phones. Here's Nick in Dearborn. Nick, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello.
Oh.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Kind of.
First-time caller. I really love your show. I don't always agree with what you have to say, but...
We hear that a lot.
Yeah.
I always like hearing your opinion, though. But what I wanted to say was, I didn't vote for Romney or Obama. I really don't like Romney saying that he would let Detroit go bankrupt.
That's right.
You know, my dad worked for GM for 27 years.
Yeah, that's what sunk him in Ohio, for sure.
And he didn't even say he would let Detroit go bankrupt. He said, let Detroit go bankrupt.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, everyone I know, everyone I meet, too, everyone, it would have destroyed so many families, and it was really a bad thing.
You know, he feels that he got a real raw deal on it, that what he was talking about wasn't he wanted them to go out of business, but what he wanted was what he called a structured bankruptcy where they could cut labor costs. So what they were really talking about was the whole Republican plan to destroy unions. That was part of the big agenda. It is part of the big agenda of everything that the Republicans do.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a structured bankruptcy, you would have to say, okay, everybody's going to be working in the auto plants for $8 or $9 an hour. So it's going to be back to the 1920s. I mean, that essentially, we talk about the Republicans wanting to go back to the 1950s. 1950s, the union.
That's pushing minimum wage there.
Yeah, the 1950s was an era of strong union power,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, they could make, they could bring working class people into the middle class.
They want to sing union songs.
But hey, Nick, you wanted to talk about the NDAA too, real quickly?
Yeah, that's the one thing is I didn't vote for Obama because of the NDAA bill he passed that was saying that he could indefinitely detain any American for the suspicion of being a terrorist.
Yeah. Well, let me say, to some extent, it sounds like you have a voice distorter on your phone. I know you don't, but it's not a very good quality.
I think it's a
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things to be critical of Obama about. And that's why I'm saying if we just leave them to their own devices, you know, and hope that Romney will do this and hope that Obama will do that, we'll be stuck doing that for the rest of our lives. And very possibly by 2014 or by 2016, we'll say, oh, you know, Obama didn't fix everything. Let's see if we can get a Republican, and they'll change their opinion on immigration, which they already have, because they're talking about are Hispanics. I mean, because they're saying they're a natural fit for the Republican Party, and they're very conservative and all that.
What?
Yeah. So people like
the Catholicism thing is one thing, but
yeah, well, they said they're religious and they're industrious, and you know. Yeah,
they were trying to snow everyone into voting for him. That's it.
Yeah, but right. Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Nick. Appreciate your call. Here is Ed in Port Huron. Go ahead. You're on the air. You got a statement?
Guys, yeah. Thanks for taking my call, you guys.
Yeah.
Hey. No. What I was going to say is that, you know what, it wasn't really a mandate for Obama or the Democratic Party. When you look at, like, there's 30 Republican governors right now, but they've taken a moderate view. The far majority of them have. And that's
you
what
mean
I
like
think.
Scott Walker and
not Rick, Scott Walker.
Rick Scott.
And, come on now, Peter.
And Jan Brewer and, you know, the governor. You know, come on.
Here.
What?
But I'm just getting slaughtered here now. No, come on, man. But
now, that is not a slaughtering.
Yeah. I was just trying to bring you up to speed. I mean, most of the Republican governors are pretty right-wing.
You know what the problem, though, is?
Terry Branstad, Iowa.
I am a Republican, but you know what? I'm a big pro Second Amendment person, but you know what? I'm very pro choice. You know what? I work with immigrants, and I'm very pro immigrant. And I think that's a decent amount of people in the Republican Party are actually that. But what's happened is we've let the real far right take control of our party, and it's screwed us in this election again.
Sure.
And that's the problem. If we come out there and show that it's your fellow neighbor, you know, I mean, the Democratic Party's got it perfect. They really do, because they've taken in everybody. And
what do you mean?
Everybody,
I mean, they've,
what I mean
they've
by
included
that,
everyone.
That's what right, you should do.
Their views and you know, I agree. And instead of what the Republican Party has done is let the money take control of the Tea Party. And that's really kind of, that's messed us up from any national election. Like here in Michigan, I mean, you've seen, except for Proposal 1, and, you know, you had Stabenow and Obama win, but the other proposals, including Prop 2, lost handily.
Sure.
And it goes to show that this state has, you got people that voted for Obama and Stabenow, but they also voted against so-called union, you know, pro-union proposition.
I also wonder how many people, you know, there was so much misinformation going out there, and the people were getting hammered on radio ads and television ads with misinformation. So I wonder what the percentage is.
Well, on the other hand, in 2008, the state voted for Obama and also voted to make marriage only between a man and a woman.
Right.
So there are a lot of Democratic voters, for instance, that do.
Well, you know, and I have quite a few gay friends also, and it's a real shame that they can't get married. They pay taxes, they vote, they raise children, because quite a few of them were married previously, and, you know, that wasn't, they can't, you know, that's like saying that I should be gay, you know, when I'm.
Well, you know, Ed, that I'm sure soon will be overturned by the Supreme Court, perhaps even as it's currently constituted. And you can really see whether or not these people like Scalia and Thomas and the rest of them are true to the principles of the Constitution and support, you know, equal rights under the law and due process and all that.
And I'll never understand how these people think they're in the business of regulating love.
Well,
between races or
if the churches want to do it, fine. But the government, you have to have equal protection under the law, and
right.
and it's clear that gay couples don't. Yep. Ed, thank you very much. Appreciate it. You are offering solutions. I appreciate that. By the way, though, that Christian, this is in the New York Times, November 9th, Christian right failed to sway voters on issues. Christian conservatives for more than two decades are grappling with election day results that repudiated their influence and suggested the cultural tide, especially on gay issues, has shifted against them. They are reeling. I love it. Not only from the loss of the presidency, but from what many of them see as a rejection of their agenda. They lost fights against same-sex marriage in all four states where it was on the ballot and saw anti-abortion rights Senate candidates defeated and two states vote to legalize marijuana for recreational use. Yeah, what's all this stuff? It's got to have some utility. What about recreation? Right.
Yeah, it's not all work, right?
The Reverend Billy Graham dropped any pretense of nonpartisanship and all but endorsed Mitt Romney. Roman Catholic bishops denounced President Obama as a threat to life, religious liberty, and the traditional nuclear family.
Blah, blah.
Ralph Reed's Faith and Freedom Coalition distributed more voter guides in churches and contacted more homes by mail and phone than ever before. Shouldn't they have
it didn't work.
Shouldn't they? Yeah, but A, it didn't work, and B, shouldn't they have their tax-exempt status yanked?
Yeah, absolutely. Pay some money, man.
You know, I was reading in Free Thought Today, the publication of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Yes, FFRF.org. Gosh, I always do that, don't I?
I
love them.
They were talking that as an act of civil disobedience, because under the IRS code, that since the churches are tax exempt, they can't advocate political positions or endorse candidates.
Right, yet.
So they... These preachers, I think maybe even like 1,000 of them, have they preached and for Mitt Romney from the pulpit, recorded it and sent it into the IRS. Like screw you, you know. I mean, we're tax exempt and we're going to do what we want, right? Let's see, where are we here? Oh yeah, millions of Evan, who is this? President of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary says millions of American evangelicals are absolutely shocked, I tell you, not just by the presidential election, but by the entire avalanche of results that came in. It's not that our message, we think abortion is wrong, we think same-sex marriage is wrong, didn't get out. It did get out. It's that the entire moral landscape has changed. An increasingly secularized America understands our position and has rejected them. Now, that's nuts.
Sure is.
African Americans and the Hispanics are very religious.
Yes.
80, what was it? No, I can't remember. Let's do the low number so I don't exaggerate. 70% of people that profess no religion voted for Romney.
Oh,
no, I'm sorry.
What?
I keep getting confused. Obama.
Peter.
Obama.
Don't confuse
Obama.
Me.
Yeah. Says, yeah. They
said well, you know what? Hate never wins. That's how I feel about this whole thing.
The election results are just one indication of larger trends in American religion that Christian conservatives are still digesting. Americans who have no religious affiliation, pollsters call them the nuns, are now about one-fifth of the population overall. The younger generation is even less religious. About one-third of Americans ages 18 to 22 say they are either atheists, agnostics, or nothing in particular. Oh, yeah, 70% of those who said they had no religion voted for Mr. Obama. But let's see, Robert P. Jones, executive director of the Public Religion Research Institute, said this election signaled the last where a white Christian strategy is workable.
Mm.
That's good.
Yeah, that's real good. I know what the younger population, when it seems like when I just say, hey, I'm an atheist, people are in the main generally just...
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever about it. Or they say, I am too. I mean, there's a couple of girls I go to school with who are devout Christians, and they always say, it's okay, Jesus loves you anyway, Julian.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
It's a good fallback. But on the other hand, these right-wing Christians that have been now repeatedly calling Obama the Antichrist, this is really whack job stuff. Here, a Christian response to Obama victory. This is from a right-wing site, a very big one. In the afterglow of Obama's victory, Ayman al-Zawahiri, Ayatollah Khomeini, Vladimir Putin, and Chris Matthews from MSNBC, as well as, you ready for this? This is how they talk about you folks. As well as millions of potheads, sodomites, pro-abort, and all common moochers are sharing a collective thrill. This is a Christian response to Obama victory.
That's just so Christian-like.
Yeah. And how about this one from the same site? This is a news site, by the way. Did Jesus actually reveal the name of the Antichrist? An American Christian has produced a brief film for YouTube that connects one statement by Jesus in the Gospel of Luke to President Barack Obama. And then he goes on.
God, with what a nutbag.
Yeah, with the whole thing that, where is it, that the word for heaven in Hebrew is Barak, and then,
See, the movie has a prominent disclaimer stressing the film does not declare B-H-O to be the Antichrist, but
B-H-O,
is merely
Barack
Hussein Obama.
Yeah.
But to the Antichrist, but is merely pointing out the Hebrew words and their striking correlations to Jesus' statement. You know, come on, get a life.
Remember,
something worth a damn.
Remember, we've talked, haven't we, in the past about back in the day when they had what they called backward masking?
Yeah, like.
You could, when there was LPs, yeah,
that
if you played Led Zeppelin backwards, you got all these devil messages.
Yeah, and there was the Paul is dead and the whole thing.
Well, but the main thing was backwards, playing it backwards.
Yeah, right.
Which struck me as how weird could it be that, like, Led Zeppelin, you know, would bother to do this because how could anybody understand it?
I remember I did the whole little backward thing.
Well, you know what you can do with quarter-inch tape and tape reels, which you can't do anymore. I don't know. Can you do it?
Which is like a reel-to-reel, which is what we're not talking about masking tape.
Yeah, right. We're talking so that if you put in there, and I did this, and I used to play it on the air, and if you said Jesus loves you, and then you flip the tape around, it would say, "Oh, I love sausage."
Oh, God. So really, what is it?
Yeah. Or if you said, I love sausage, it would go, Jesus, love you.
Oh, God.
I mean, see, these people are so wacky.
They really are.
Yeah. I mean.
And they're just getting wackier.
Yeah.
All right.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
We got a woman.
Yay!
And that's
female
representing. It's our Joni. Joni, hi, you're on the air.
Not just any woman, Peter.
It's Joni from Farmington Hills.
Joni!
Hi, Julene, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm fabulous. I haven't felt so good in such a long time. You know how they say it's great to be a gracious loser?
Yeah.
It's even better to be a gracious winner.
Right.
In fact, gloating isn't bad either.
It's not bad. What's our word, Peter? What are we?
Schadenfreude.
We're Schadenfreude.
Yeah, okay. I could, you know, feel bad about people, but not this time.
No. Nope.
We're delighting in their
pain.
I'm
reveling in their defeat. I'm sorry. But, you know, the look on Anne's face, Queen Anne could not believe she wouldn't be moving into the White Palace.
Anne Romney, she wanted that. She wanted that dish room so bad.
None of them could believe what was theirs as a matter of right. They got cheated out of it by the lower races.
I miss the spectacle of Carl Rove going to anaphylactic shock on Fox. Announced for Ohio.
He was like a little stubborn brat.
And what's that woman's name that was there? Who's a Republican?
Megyn Kelly.
Megyn Kelly says, "Is this just math that you tell yourself and Republicans to make yourselves feel good?" And they had to take Karl Rove down to the room where they crunch the numbers and say, "Look, it's over. Obama has won."
Carl.
I mean, they probably thought, so many of us thought because of the infusion of so much money into the political system because of the Supreme Court decision of Citizens United that maybe, you know, there would really be a problem. But I'll tell you, a lot of the Democrats had a ton of money as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you consider that only 39% of the population, the white population, voted for Obama.
Yeah.
But you know, the problem, I love what Bill Maher said. You know, he said, white people vote for white people like it's going out of style. And like most things that white people do, it's going out of style.
That is so funny.
But you know what, Joni? If you get rid of the slave states that have never gotten over losing the Civil War, you know, the Confederacy, the greatest traitors in American history, the statistics changed significantly. You know, like the majority of whites in a number of states in the Northeast, for instance, voted for Obama. I don't know what it was like in Michigan, but in Mississippi, where, what was it, Phil Oakes 30, 40, 40 years ago.
Old
saying,
folk singer.
Yeah, folk singer saying, Mississippi, find another country to be part of. That's what we're saying. Let them, this time alone, well, first we got to have a population transfer, and then let them secede out of here. Except,
you know what? I want to do the same thing with those people in Florida. They don't deserve the vote. I think we should ban them all from voting. Just lop off Florida.
Well, there's a whole little thing about, there's a whole little thing about Texas and Arizona too. Certain things.
Well, they were slaves. I think Arizona. I can't remember. Was a territory then? Yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah. All right, Joni. Yeah. Go ahead.
I have to give you another one of Bill's great lines.
Go ahead.
He said that Republicans have the same problem as the Beach Boys. Their fans are dying.
Oh, wow.
Oh, Bill Maher.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Well, you know.
Joni, I love your sick little sexy humor.
What's his name? I always forget his name. The senator from Kentucky. Mitch McDonald.
Oh, yes.
He said we've got to broaden our base beyond angry white men.
No kidding. That, what an insight. That's
yeah.
Stephanie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're. Right. Right. Okay.
Oh, good times.
All right. Here's one of our faves. Maurice from Detroit's been watching movies. What are you watching, Maurice?
Peter and Jolene.
Hello, what? Maurice.
Obama America 2016. Have you seen it?
No, it's a crazy right-wing film.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy.
You watched it.
I was interrupted too many times to really understand it.
Well, that's probably because it doesn't make any sense. It's all a bunch of BS.
It is.
Yeah. So.
And so, but you know, people are buying this stuff, Maurice.
Yeah, that's right.
I just bought it just to see what it was about. That's
no, no, no. I mean, they're buying into it. Like, they believe it.
I mean, you actually bought it?
Maurice.
It was only $2.
Oh, that's all. It's worth 2 cents, but I'm proud of you for not spending more than $2. Well, Maurice, is there anything you can tell us? You know, other than you were confused.
Is that the Dinesh D'Souza movie?
The thing about it is,
what?
How about if I drop it down at the radio station? You be your own judge.
Sure.
Okay, drop it down.
Do it.
Business hours,
take
though.
Yes, 8:30 to 5:30. Front desk is open. And just leave our name on it.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, Maurice. That'll be
and
nice.
And say hi to Eliza. She's the coolest at the
yeah,
front desk.
At the front desk. All right. Boy, here, Mike and Fenton have been waiting a long time. Go ahead, Mike, you're on the air. Open lines at 313-298-WRIF.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Mike and Fenton.
You guys haven't sounded this happy in a while.
I know.
Hey, it's been a little grim. It's been a little tense.
Yeah, I didn't vote for either one. I got a statement and a question. I'm ashamed of both. Excuse me. Both parties, I think they just cater to each party's agendas, and they're not taking care of our own business, and they don't intend to. And I think that's very sad. And I'd like to ask Peter, what do you think if we could get a good liberal in there, what would be the difference?
Well, I think what we need
first
is
first of all, getting him in there.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let me. I've got actually a long answer. If you're through, I can give my long answer, while, you know.
Yeah, I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, good. All right. Here's what I think. we got some open lines. Curtis, you hang on.
Was that it?
And, no. I've got more.
What?
Listen, government, what we call the state, the political state, not like the state of Michigan or Ohio, but
yeah,
the state being a governmental entity, the idea that some people rule and other people are ruled. It arose like 4,000 years ago, and it wasn't like there was ever a golden age of it. The state began, the government began as a racket, all right? It began as a racket. So what was the racket? It was protecting the wealth and privilege of this upper class that had developed suddenly out of nowhere. Because most societies were, you know, they didn't have much. All the people that lived around here, I mean, there was a, you know, different examples that some societies had accumulated more stuff. They'd gone into agriculture and, you know, that there was an accumulation of that. Well, so they needed a political state and a hierarchical state. In other words, where some people gave the orders and other people took them. And if you're you know, down the line, you had no choice other than to do what you were told, because it wasn't like democratic. I mean, there was no democratic political entities up until, you know, for the next 3,000 years or something like that. States were nasty and brutish. They were, you know, any kind of objection to the ruler or the ruling class was dealt with in a very summarily nasty manner. And and they had to develop all these things. For one thing, they had to develop this idea that they were, they had, where did the legitimacy come from? Where does the legitimacy come from if it's not come from the people of one group or one small group of people to rule the other people? Well, it was divine, you know, the divine right of kings, right? Or, and it began pretty early. So they had developed, instead of these gods that were sort of intermingled with one's lives, and they were in gods in a tree trunk and, you know, in the ground, and a lot of magic and, you know, what they called mythopoetic descriptions, little pagan stuff and all that. They developed these sky gods, and they had one rule. Yeah, yeah. And it was hierarchical. And the rule was based on punishment if you didn't do what you were told to do. So this was reflected in secular rule, the rulers on earth. But one thing that always remained was that government was a racket to protect the wealth and privileged of this little small sliver at the top. How in the world some people in Europe decided to, in some ways, to resurrect the kind of democratic presence that was there in before state society. In other words, that people all men are created equal, it says in our foundation document. I mean, that was amazing. To put, and then we're no longer. Remember, I said the other day, we were not subjects of anyone, but we were citizens. That there was an equality. So the task has always been to make government serve the people, right? Because government has been tyrannical almost throughout its history, and that's why that. And without government, what are we ruled by? We're ruled by this elite. This financial, this corporate, business elite that couldn't care less about us or our families, our communities, or even our country. You can tell that by the way they would, you know, take all these jobs away like Romney's Bain Capital firm did. And I remember saying the other way, this just came about because there's always been this struggle between the owners and the people that work for the owners. And remember, you know, there had to be, you know, huge fights just to get things like the 8-hour day and a weekend and minimum wage and Medicare and all this stuff like this. Because we've heard Medicare, oh, you know, you're old and, well, too bad. See you later.
Just like slowly wither away.
Yeah. Social Security, you know, Republicans oppose that. They oppose Medicare.
Oh,
they
starve.
Oppose all of it.
Yeah. Right.
So the term socialism, in other words, to take, activity, if you will, social activity, and broaden it so the expense is borne by everyone so that we don't wind up to be in some miserable state, either when you're working at the job or you're retired or that you get sick or whatever. So that it's important to actually expand government and to limit the power of the people with all the money and all the privilege. And we're going back in the other way. We're going back to the 19th century now.
And it could have been worse if Romney.
Yeah, it would have been much worse if Romney. Because Romney
would have been, not could have been.
Yeah, because you know, Romney represents that 19th century capitalist mentality. So what do you say? How would it be any different if a liberal was in? Well, we could, for instance, or a progressive, or a leftist, or a radical, even, or something like that. First off, as I always say, cut the war budget by 3/4, as Ron Paul says, take almost all of our bases back from overseas, free college tuition, free medical care for everybody.
All good things.
What else?
There.
Yeah, we have enough wealth here. We have enough wealth here. So why are things in such mean circumstances that we, you know, cities going bankrupt and all of that? Oh, because those unions are asking too much. Well, because people wanted to live a decent life for their family. And this country can afford it. It can afford it for everybody, but it's about the distribution of income and wealth. And you got to fix that. Okay. That's what it would be. All right. Let's take a break. Let's see. Curtis and Keith, you're next. Got more open lines as well.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Thanks for listening to 101 WRIF on the World Wide Web at WRIF.com. Everything that rocks worldwide. You're listening to WRIF.com.
WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
And this is our final segment, so give us a ring, some open lines even, 313-298-WRIF. As you can imagine, we're talking about the election, extending the pain.
Felt fine.
You know, I was getting mailings on Friday. Still,
were you really?
Yeah, from and everybody was telling me every time they'd come home there'd be 10 messages on their phone. I never got a single message. Did you?
No, I don't have a landline.
Oh.
But okay. They're by the next election, they're going to have that down, how
yeah,
to get through
will.
To that. Remember I told you the story about my Republican neighbor who called the city on me because I had my Obama sign up too long last
right.
time? Well, I was just waiting to call the city on her this time, but she took it down.
Oh, I know what you mean. Right on the corner?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is our last segment, and we will have a podcast of this up at noon today. This is Monday. And thank you, John, for putting this together.
Very much.
Calvin, if you're there, thank you, too.
I think Calvin's in there as well.
Okay. And, well, here, let's hear here's a word from Jim Morrison.
You cannot petition the Lord with prayer!
Indeed. A New York man was crushed by a giant crucifix and had to have his leg amputated.
Okay.
You laugh at that.
I'm sorry. Well, there's a whole reason I laugh at it.
Yes, a deeply religious man in upstate New York who believes a church's giant crucifix cured his wife of cancer and his own leg amputated. Why am I laughing? About the same... When the same crucifix collapsed on top of him.
So it was at his expense.
Yeah.
Even if it were true, he probably is now saying that, you know.
The accident occurred when 45-year-old David Jimenez was cleaning the 600-pound crucifix, which was allegedly held up by a single screw.
What?
Jimenez has been a frequent visitor.
Yeah. I missed that part.
Yeah, you gotta have some sense about these things. He's been a frequent visitor to the Church of St. Patrick in Newburgh, New York, where he made regular stops to pray for his wife, who is now cancer-free.
That's beautiful. I'm glad she is.
So now he's suing the church, though, for $3 million.
That damn crucifix that saved your wife's life.
Yeah.
Now you're suing over it. Oh, my God.
And he wants $3 million because he will not be able to return to his job at a pizza restaurant.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love pizza.
The church has reportedly, and the church is raising money for him, for his leg.
See? And he's suing.
Yeah.
Ugh.
What would Jesus do?
What Jesus would say, this whole world's gone mad.
I think so. All right. Here is Curtis in Westland. Curtis, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, how you doing tonight, man?
Good.
Good, good. I was just wondering if y'all are prepared to have a debate where the opposition isn't muted out tonight.
Is what?
Where the opposition isn't muted out tonight. What he's saying
no.
is, are we... Yeah, wait, no.
Okay. Okay, I have a couple of different things that I'd like to bring to light.
Sure.
First of all, I'm just curious to why every time somebody calls that didn't vote for Obama, y'all want to know what color they are.
No, we don't.
I didn't say that.
No, we don't. We don't always
Jalene,
say that.
Jalene asked one person.
One person.
Next.
Because I felt like he had no perspective from anything but a white guy's perspective.
Next. What's the next thing?
Okay. Next, I would like to, there was a woman that you had on there. I don't remember what her name was. She went through a list of things that we're not going to get in January.
Rachel right. Maddow.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's on MSNBC.
The mention was that what we are getting in January is a second-term president that spent 20 years in the most racist church in America, in Chicago.
Oh, are we going to bring that back up again?
Well, race obviously played into the conversation tonight, so I'm just enlightening you.
Well, you know, he wasn't in the most racist church. I mean, the church, what do you do? You just sit in front of, Curtis, you're in this working class suburb where people like Romney and his Birmingham friends just think you're trash. I got to tell you, we don't think that at all. But, you know.
Rich and poor, and I'm one of the 47%.
I know. So why did this guy?
Why?
This guy thinks you're a moocher, and you know he insults your very being. I mean,
I don't think mooching is not near as crucial as if you elect a president that has sat 20 years listening to a hate monger.
I don't want to.
He hasn't even been in that church for a long time.
But wait. But
and
how is
he's
that?
He's denounced those words. He's denounced it over and over again.
And how is that reflected in any of his programs or policies or statements? Hello, Curtis. Earth to Curtis.
How is that reflected in his policies?
I mean, if we were to grant that the Reverend Wright's church was a hate church, I don't want to go in arguing about
that. That was still 4 years ago.
Yeah. How is any of this reflected in the way Barack Obama has ruled or
in any way,
conducted himself, his speech, anything like that? You know, Curtis, you got these big pauses.
Yeah.
You ought to think about it. Let me just say this to you again.
And if you want to answer, call talkyes@yahoo.com. Just send us an email.
Yeah.
Think about it and send us an email.
Mitt Romney thinks you're fine to, you know, to fix his car or to paint his house or something like that, but he's not going to invite you to his little soirees at the Thompson Hotel in Birmingham. And, for somebody of the working class to have any defense of a multimillionaire like that.
What do we call that? What we were talking about that before the show, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Curtis. What?
Remember when we were talking about that particular person we know? That what was the way that you put it? I can't remember exactly.
Well, it has a swear word in it.
Well, can you fix it?
Psychoanalytic chicken poop.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Right. So eloquently.
Let's see. Here is Will. Will's in Taylor, another downriver working class suburb. Go ahead, Will. You're on the air.
Yeah, hey. Who voted for Obama? Gas prices go down. They all went up. The jobs are, hey, they're saying the economy, we're back. We're in recession. We're all broke.
Well,
but they want to give the rich people a break and give the poor people tax some more. Why?
They want to
take away from the rich and give more to the poor. Is that what?
No,
you're saying?
They want to give to the rich and take away from the poor. They want.
That's exactly what I just said. That's exactly what I just said.
But wait a minute. That's that's what Romney wants to do,
yes.
And that's not what Obama wants to do.
No, they tax you less. If you make under 50, they want to tax you more.
Well,
come
we
on.
Agree. We agree with you. We're agreeing with you. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's start there.
He didn't understand what you were saying.
No, we're in agreement here.
Yeah. All right, Will. Thank you very much. We're in agreement.
Have a great night.
Yeah. Let's see here. Where are we at? Okay. Here is Keith in Ypsilanti. Hey, Keith, you're on the air. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Go ahead.
Great show. And there lies the problem, that lack of understanding. I'm still waiting to hear from the opposition. I thought you had it for a second. I'm still waiting to hear a decent argument from the opposition. But all that we've heard, the depth of it, we listened to one Republican earlier say, well, he was on food stamps, but I don't want to be on food stamps. And that was, to him, that's what determined he was a Romney person versus an Obama.
Yeah, that's why he's different from all those other bloodsuckers out there,
Oh,
right?
You know what, Keith? That is an incredible observation.
Is,
and I don't know why that didn't pop right into my mind in the way that it did to you. That's the argument that everyone else wants to be on food stamps, right?
Right.
Because what a great deal that is.
Yeah, I mean, you get so much money. I mean, you're having steak and lobster. Life is good.
Outrageous. But here's my 2 points that I'm curious about. Well, first thing I want to say, thank God that Romney didn't get in, because I can see Trump sitting up in there taking up all the country business time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
And then number two, now, my difficulty with Romney, that title of pioneer of outsourcing, some kind of way, that title kind of sort of stopped him from talking to me about his concern for American jobs. So now what I'm wondering, he didn't seem to need the White House to be able to send so many jobs away. I'm wondering, what will he do? Will he fall back to that outsourcing spirit, or will he start talking to some of those businesses that have left in an attempt to bring them back?
I doubt that. Here is the way they're going to bring jobs back to the United States, Keith. They're going to destroy the unions, and then they will have a
lowest wage possible.
Lowest wage possible.
Back.
Yeah, so people go, hey, why are you making things in China when we can pay people here $3.75 an hour? So, and I don't know. I have no idea what Romney's going to do now. What do you do if you have $350 million already? I, you know, the Beats me.
I wouldn't have a problem. I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, this global market, I wouldn't have a problem with lower wages, but everything else has to come down across the board also if we're going to buy the country anytime. So, we're in a quandary.
Well, I agree with
that. We want to keep those wages up, and we want to keep these unions.
Yeah, I mean, there's enough money.
As strong as possible.
As I always say, there's enough money in the world. There's enough wealth in the hands of maybe, I don't know, 10,000, mostly men, few women there, 10,000 men to eliminate poverty everywhere in the world. And the reason that, I mean, we take it for granted that when you look in Africa and Latin America and Asia, and you look at these teeming cities of people living in shanty towns, you say, well, you know, that's the way it is because they're not in America.
They shop in garbage dumps, piles of garbage for food.
And the reason that is because there is so much hoarding and just a small percentage of the world's population of wealth. I mean, these 10,000 guys and a few women, if they let loose of like 99% of it, they'd still be multimillionaires, and we wouldn't have the specter of what we see now.
They have absolutely no conscience. I don't know how these people live with themselves. Really don't.
All right. Thank you very much, Keith. I appreciate it.
Keith, thank you. Good point.
You know, but listen, I remember on my website, there's this little thing you put in your salary and you can see in what percentage of the population
like
you are.
Like the 99% kind of thing.
Yeah, right. So,
are you the 1% or are you the 99%?
You can go to this. You can figure out exactly what I make. I'm in the 66th percentile, right? And in the world's population, I'm in the 1%.
So am I.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
and that's not saying we have a lot of money.
No.
Trust us. We're not sitting here like, oh, we're in the 1%.
No.
If you know us, you know.
Well,
the
point being is that if somebody was living in one of these teeming cities I was talking about, they'd probably be a little hard pressed to see the difference even between Romney and us, even though he's a multimillionaire.
Yeah.
Because, we live in warm houses with running water and heat in the winter, and
we can just
food,
go to the grocery store.
Food. We
cook
have cars. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I mean, more than one car. We have a car, right?
Yeah, right. Well, Romney, how many cars did he have?
Oh,
a bunch of Cadillacs
with the elevators.
You know, somebody said one of the Republican things that he said that the liberal media gave Romney a bad deal, and where did I hear this? Maybe it was on the Stephanie Miller show. I don't know. But that they were playing these audio clips of every gaffe that Romney ever made, the 47%, the elevators for his cars, the trees.
We went over to London and sold it the hell out of them.
Yeah, the trees in Michigan are the right height.
That was insane.
Yeah, I love to fire people. And the last one was, you remember when he said, oh, I'm unemployed?
Oh, God, please.
Yeah. All right, let's take a couple more calls in Detroit. Here's Fred. Hey, Fred, thanks. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Fred.
Now, don't forget that, oh, goodness.
What?
I forgot what to tell you. Yeah. Anyway.
How about the difference between liberals and conservatives? That's what it says here.
Okay, well, we'll start there, but it had something to do with Romney. Oh, I suddenly remembered. He doesn't watch NASCAR. But he's friendly with the owners.
Right, that's what he said. That was another one.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, he lost, mainly because of his gas and a lot of these other Republican congressmen. You know, it was a mistake filled all the way down the line, right up to Election Day.
Sure.
And the reason why the right was so stunned that he could lose and lose as big as he did was that they had drank the Kool-Aid from Fox News. They live in a bubble, plain and simple.
Yep, that's a really good point.
They live in a bubble.
Well, they are the bubble, the
ego.
The echo chamber. But no, I was going to just say, I think Jalene just hit on it. It's the ego. They're from a class of people where they expect everything
go their way.
Go their way. And people like Obama, and people like the majority of people, the 47%, like I said, they're there to fix their cars and,
And you just stay over there in your little corner.
Right. So they couldn't believe this.
Peasantry.
Yeah. This could happen. Well,
I think one of the things that a true liberal leader would have asked, for instance, and he would have gone to the Tea Party and asked them, why did you want to not fix health care?
Yeah.
And it totally ignore the fact that the banks are not loaning, that the banks are too big and should be broken up. Why is your not, you know, why is your focus not there?
Absolutely.
You know, because they started this.
But I got to tell you, Fred, what I've been saying all along tonight, that if there's not some significant progress forward in getting employment for people, and there's got to be really something, you know, there's got to be either a huge government stimulus program, or there's got to be, you know, they would provide construction jobs for, you know, restoring the infrastructure of this country, or if this turns out to just be the new normal, I don't know if people are going to say, oh, well, let's get those Republicans back in. All right, Fred, thank you. You have a good night. Thanks for joining us as usual. Here is Kathy. Kathy, hi, you're on the air. Oops, sorry.
How are you doing?
We're doing good.
Hi,
thanks for calling in.
One of the things you didn't address tonight was the voucher program.
For Medicare.
Yes.
Yeah, this is what Ryan and Romney wanted. They wanted, and the Social Security, too. It's like Bush. They want to turn it over to their buddies on Wall Street.
Privatize.
Yeah, privatize.
Well, I'll tell you what. My mom and a lot of her neighbors, you know, very, very stout Republicans, once they heard that, they all voted for Obama.
Really?
Good.
You know, that's interesting.
Good.
Because the higher you got in age, the higher the vote for Romney. So Romney won the majority of votes of people over 60. But it's good that some people were a little sensible. I mean, you know, one of the things they wanted to do, they didn't want to lose that 60-plus vote. So what they were saying, they were going to have it a voucher program for people under 55, right? So if you're under 55, you were going to be facing that. But the people, you know, if you would say, hey, I got mine, you know, what the hell?
Why?
Yeah, doesn't work.
Well, you know what? You know, it's like my mom, she's 85.
Yeah.
I'll be 50 on Friday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Well, thank you. Luckily for me, I'm a Teamster, and I have a very good job.
There you go.
Right on.
You know, but my brother and my sister, who are only a couple years older than me, they've got to pay for their own insurance.
Wow.
Yeah, for my brother, it costs him almost, I think it's like $700 a month.
I know people like that. It's amazing.
You know, so it's like, once they heard about this voucher program and everything, my mom spread the word. It's got to go.
Go, Mom.
Absolutely.
Maybe she'll stay on over here on this side of the fence.
Well, you know, she's got a daughter that's a Teamster, so she might.
Right.
You know, a friend of mine's father just passed away at 97. He was a lifelong Republican, and his last political act, he voted by, what do you call it?
Absentee.
Thank you. Absentee voted. He voted for Obama.
Yay.
Oh, good.
I was talking about Birmingham. Birmingham Republican.
Aww.
And his son said if he would have lived to 100, he probably would have become an anarchist.
I love that.
All right,
that's
Kathy.
A riot.
You have a very good night.
Oh,
I'm
thank
sorry.
You so much.
Yeah. All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy.
Thanks for joining. You know, we never talked about this David Petraeus affair.
Oh, yeah.
Literally
affair. He had an affair. He resigned.
Yeah, and it's sort of bubbling up. But one of the things I never understand, don't any of these people read
That they're always going to get caught?
Well, that they're always going to get caught, but why are they still sending emails?
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to meet here and then... You know, and,
or text messages or whatever it is.
Last night you
by
were
the
so
way,
great.
So, yeah, I know. I can't wait. That was so hot. Can't wait to do it again, baby. Anyway, for some people who don't know who David Petraeus was the CIA director, David Petraeus.
Who was a general in both Iraq and in Afghanistan. Didn't he seem to be wearing an excessive amount of medals and campaign ribbons, actually?
He's got a lot of
he'd been around.
History, yeah.
He'd been around.
He said, after being married for over 37 years, I showed extremely poor judgment by engaging in an extramarital affair.
Well, I must have been in trouble at home because you know, he was doing it with his biographer, who was sort of a younger
who
hottie.
Was writing his biography.
Yeah, and she didn't write everything. and his wife looked like an older... yeah. You know, beyond middle age, probably like that. And so, probably trouble in the home.
Oh, boy. Right. He's sleeping on the couch just like Bill was.
That's right. All right. Hey, people. Guess what? We don't have to talk about elections for at least another 2 years. Isn't that sweet? But this one was good. I appreciate everybody listening and calling in. And John, who writes just me, he's there. We'll have a podcast up at either WRIF.com.
And John is our producer, by the way.
Yeah. Right. Or Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. And there'll be a notice of it on Facebook.
Tomorrow.
Facebook today.
Today.
Facebook.com/Night Call. Hey, got a great interview coming up right after these.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Thanks for rocking with the Riff online. This is WRIF.com. Detroit's Rock Station on the web. Thanks for listening to WRIF.com.
Concert Station,
101 The Riff delivers again. Three Doors Down, live. Listen to win your free tickets for Three Doors Down, December 5th at the Fox. One lucky winner will get The Riff Ultimate Upgrade Treatment. Front row for Three Doors Down. Listen and win.
Hey, this is Brad from Three Doors Down. You're listening to 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
I would like to introduce you to the fine men who risk their lives and livers to make this possible.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. The Riff.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Thanks for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. Well, the big event finally over. The election completed. The results are in. In fact, we just heard as we record this interview that Florida has been added to the Barack Obama column. Pretty much a decent sweep for the Democrats, for liberal and progressive thought. An incredible observer of political events, someone I've always admired, read his books and interviewed before, is Thomas Frank. You may remember him from his landmark book, What's the Matter with Kansas? How Conservatives Won the Heart of America. Also, The Wrecking Crew, with an interesting subtitle, How Conservatives Ruined Government, Enriched Themselves, and Beggared the Nation. And his best-selling New York Times book, Pity the Billionaire, The Hard Time Swindle and the Unlikely Comeback of the Right, has just been published in paper by Picador. We welcome Thomas Frank. I should also say, I don't want to give him all his credit. He's also the founding editor of The Baffler and a monthly columnist for Harper's. We're reaching him at his office in the nation's capital. Thomas Frank, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
It's great to be here.
Hey, so all of this, all that you've written before, you know, the conservatives are taking over, ordinary people that shouldn't be are voting against their own self-interest now. Is that all negated by what happened?
Some of it probably is, but not. I mean, there are still plenty of ordinary people that are voting, you know, that voting for people, you know, for candidates that are, I don't like that formulation, voting against their own interests, but that certainly is what, there's millions of people that did that. But the, you know, by and large, I expected Barack Obama to win. I was not surprised that he won. Everything unfolded pretty much according to, you know, what the pollsters were saying. I'm not one of these people that was denying reality, you know, right up to the last minute or something like that.
Well, I guess, because I'll tell you, Thomas Frank, I was expecting you to say every word I ever wrote was correct. But so,
that's certainly true. I mean, it is correct. I write history. It's totally correct as a description of the phenomena that I'm describing. Like, Pity the Billionaire is about the unlikely comeback of the right in 2010, and that was really unlikely.
Sure.
And I would say, watching this happen. It's weird how we are replaying what happened 4 years ago with, you know, a little less. The landslide for Obama is considerably less great this time than it was in 2008. It was a much closer election. But that once again you see this real complacency on the part of pundits about the end of conservatism. They think that this is just something they can brush off and they don't have to worry about anymore. And I think they are deluding themselves.
Yeah, my thought is, in fact, I just said this to a colleague of mine, 2 years from now, in the next election cycle, it's very possible that there could be a return of conservatism. And they certainly have not backed off an inch. I mean, I just saw a video online. I never like to give publicity to people that I don't agree with. But they were saying that we cannot back off an inch from conservative principles.
They always say that. This is one of the – look, I mean, I'm not a conservative. I was one when I was 15 years old. I'm very liberal. But one of the reasons that I find them so interesting is that in their mind, conservatives, you know, conservatism itself never fails. We only fail it,
mm-hmm.
as one of my friends put it one time. It is failed by its bearers, but the doctrine itself goes on and on. And so the doctrine is not, you know, they can't back down from that. They never back down. This is really fascinating. The idea is they have to do a better job selling it next time around. And if you think they won't do it, you know, you might very well be surprised. But I have to say there were a lot of surprises for me just this time around.
Like what?
I said all along Romney was a really weak candidate. I mean, the idea of running a, you know, quasi-billionaire, near-billionaire, you know, and a guy from the financial industry in the aftermath of this, you know, financial crisis and this sort of epic Wall Street meltdown, that was a really poor idea.
Yeah, I would say.
He was just tailor-made for Barack Obama to sort of you know, nail him with the various populist arguments. By the way, which is, you know, Barack Obama's great populist turn. This is something that I've been advising Democrats to do for a really long time, because populism is what wins in America. And Mitt Romney was almost perfect fall guy for that strategy. I mean, just it's hard to come up with someone, you know, less populist. I mean, just think about this. Think about it this way. And I'm not trying to get the Republicans off the hook here by saying they nominated a lousy candidate. They deserve to be on the hook, and they nominated a lousy candidate. But if you think about the last, like, you know, 10 or so presidential elections, the guy who wins is always the guy, as, you know, the formula goes, that you'd rather have a beer with.
Sure.
And as neither one of these guys was really much of a populist, I mean, Barack Obama, former university professor, you know, Mitt Romney, capitalist, but frankly, in that competition, Barack Obama wins. You know, he's more of a regular guy than this other character. And look, I know why they chose Romney. He was better than any of the other sort of people that were available to them. If you look back, remember back to the Republican primaries, but that doesn't mitigate the fact that he was, you know, possibly the worst candidate for the current situation imaginable.
Thomas Frank is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. There is a fully updated and expanded edition of his book, Petty the Billionaire, The Hard Time Swindle, The Unlikely Comeback of the Right. Thomas Frank, probably his best-known book, is What's the Matter with Kansas. Mitt Romney famously went to Cranbrook Institute here, a wealthy prep school in suburban Detroit, and where that incident where he held down this kid when he was a high school student and cut his hair, and the kid was gay and all this. The paper of the school, I think it's called the Cranbrook Clarion, they backed Obama. for this little bit. But, you know, we have this guy that's not real palatable to Americans yet, as they keep reminding us on the, you know, I've been listening to these right wing shows, which I never do, all the whining, they say, well, we got 57 million votes. They still did.
Yeah.
And that's not the 1% or the 5% or the 10%. That's, you know, ordinary folks that just thought they could get a better shot, or they were fearful of what Obama would do. So those 57 million really do fit into your critiques.
Well, yeah, that's right. I'm not going to try to run those people down for being stupid or something like that. The thing is that the conservative movement for the last couple of years has been offering a sort of hard times protest movement. You know, that you can sign up for, and this is especially visible in 2009 and 2010, the sort of heyday of the Tea Party movement. You know, you had Glenn Beck on Fox News, that kind of thing, and it's faded a lot in the last year or so. And also, Mitt Romney really is not he's not really much of a leader of that movement. He doesn't really fit into that category. And so it really didn't work this time around. You know, but you know who was interesting in all this was Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan was sort of the designated bearer of this, you know, of this particular torch. And, you know, he was the only one of all the national candidates who was really saying what I thought were, had a really interesting populist take on, the economic situation. I mean, a completely wrong economic take. So I don't want to give these guys too much credit. I thought they deserved to lose, and I'm happy that they lost. But at the same time, they have built, you know, they made this amazing comeback after their sort of epic defeat in 2008. And they did reconquer the House of Representatives. They're still there today. And if you think they're just going to quit or give up, you're mistaken. They're going to be back.
Interesting, the vote totals for the tally for the House of Representatives. The Democrats for the seats got 2 million more votes, but because of the way the House is apportioned, still they, you know,
oh, is that right?
at a real disadvantage. Well, Thomas Frank, tell me about money in all of this. One of the things, these guys are all about return on investment, ultimately.
Yes.
But Sheldon Adelson, for instance, was particularly concerned with the Jewish vote, spent tens of millions of dollars on Mitt Romney, and 70% of Jewish votes went to Barack Obama, as they had in the election before. The Koch brothers, again, millions and millions of dollars, and everybody they backed lost. So are they going to be there in 2014 to fund the next comeback of the right?
That's a good question. I think, of course, they will, because this is what they do. And but I think two interesting things about this. First of all, a lot of this, the war in the future is going to be within the Democratic Party, and that's going on right now, and it's been going on for quite a while. And one of the really interesting questions is, you know, we see this election as a great triumph for liberalism. Is Barack Obama really a liberal? I mean, think about that. Is he?
Yeah.
Because he talks like one sometimes, you know, usually when he's on the stump, and he talks a very good populist game sometimes. But what he really seems to want is, you know, this grand bargain with the Republican Party, where they fix tax rates basically permanently and they fix federal spending basically permanently. It's a Wall Street dream. And I think you're going to see the fights moving to with it being within the Democratic Party. But yes, that money is still going to be around. The interesting thing to me is, why didn't that money have the kind of effect that everyone anticipated? And that's an interesting question. One of the reasons that I've been interested in conservative, I got into this writing about politics. I used to write about business. You know, that was my thing, business culture. And I started writing about politics because that's the conservative politics are the sort of one side of business culture. We don't think of it that way, but that's certainly what it is. And that's the sort of prism through which I try to understand this stuff. And one of the things that's most interesting about business culture is that it doesn't, it's money demands creativity. You know, money demands results. Money doesn't just get wasted. You know, and yet when you look at this campaign, they didn't do anything. Mitt Romney didn't do anything original or clever. I didn't see, you know, all I saw was just this like deluge of TV commercials, you know, the sort of top down, grossly stupid TV commercials. And that surprised me. I thought that we were going to see some really inventive things happening with all the money, but we didn't. And so I wonder if we don't have the full story yet. But there's another side to the money question, because you've got to remember Barack Obama raised almost as much, depending on how you count it, it was very close, the amount that he raised compared to Mitt Romney. And what I think you see now, and what you will continue to see in the future, and this is as a result of the kind of the amounts that it requires to run for high office, is that the choice of candidates is going to be made for you even before you get to vote. You know, that in order to run for these positions, the presidency today, but sometime in the future, also U.S. Senate jobs, you know, the amounts are just going to keep going up. But because of the amounts required to run for these jobs, for these positions, you're going to have to be the kind of guy who's a friend of the billionaire class. You know, you're going to have to have to fit within a very narrow political framework. And I think both Barack Obama and Mitt Romney did fit that framework. You know, we didn't have Barack Obama, like I said, talked populist, but that's not really who he was. I remember that, what was it, the second debate, where there was, I mean, we don't need to go over this stuff again, but Mitt Romney said something about Social Security, and Barack Obama declined to, you know, really punish him for it, really nail him for it, and said, I think that we're probably not so far apart on that issue. And that stunned me.
That's scary, yeah.
Yeah, since when does a Democrat, especially one that everybody thinks is a liberal, if not a socialist or a communist, right, since when does a Democrat let that go by? And I'll tell you since when, since Citizens United.
Well, Citizens United is the Supreme Court decision that allowed, said money is speech, and so people can put in unlimited amount of money, and that's what we see. There was a little aside by Barack Obama in his speech late Tuesday night where he said he was going to address at least some of the aspects of voting. That would seem to be the primary one, but I don't know. I don't think he has the political will to do that. I mean, it worked. I mean, this works for him, right? I mean, look what happened.
I voted for Barack Obama. I like Barack Obama. I've even met him. He was my state senator when I lived in Chicago for many years. And I've always liked him, but I don't think he is a liberal. I don't think he's a progressive. I think liberals and progressives in particular love the man and vote for the man and turn out in huge numbers to support him. But I don't think at the end of the day, I don't think that's who he is. And I think that people are mistaken to count on him, you know, to deliver great progressive solutions to things.
Now,
he's shown repeatedly that his heart is not in it.
I would suggest a friend of mine, a singer-songwriter, David Rovics, R-O-V-I-C-S. He has a song called "If Only It Was True," and he puts all the ideas of the progressive left, and then he thinks, you know, Obama's going to do all these. If only it was true. Yeah, my guest is Thomas Frank. His book, Pity the Billionaire, The Hard Times, Swindle, and the Unlikely Comeback of the Right, has just been published in paper by Picador. It's fully updated and expanded edition. There'll be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. And I always write down my guest's website, and I forgot. I looked at yours. What is that?
TCFrank.com. My initials are TC. And then FRA.com.
Okay, good. And we'll mention that again at the end of the program. Well, your first book and what brought you to public consciousness was What's the Matter with Kansas? How Conservatives Won the Heart of America. And as we said earlier, Mitt Romney had 57 million people. That's a tremendous amount of folks.
Let's talk about that a little. You've got big parts of America that are still moving to the right. I mean, I wrote, let's talk about Kansas, my home state. I'm from the suburbs of Kansas City. And when I wrote What's the Matter with Kansas, it was almost 10 years ago now. It was largely about this sort of, Kansas has always been a Republican state, but there's this brutal civil war, basically, between moderate Republicans and conservative Republicans there. And, you know, moderate Republicans being like the Dwight Eisenhower, Bob Dole sort of school of politics. And although we thought Bob Dole was a conservative when he ran for president, but today he'd be considered so moderate in Kansas that he would not be electable because the party's gone so far to the right. When I wrote the book, the two factions were sort of in a stalemate. But today the conservatives have completely prevailed in nearly every way. I mean, just here in this latest election, they managed to not only have they wiped out the Democrats in Kansas. There used to always be one or two Democratic, you know, state or important office holders in Kansas, and they've completely wiped these guys out. But they've also wiped out their moderate foes, and they control the entire government there, all four congressional seats, of course, both U.S. senators. It's amazing. So as the rest of the country, you know, as so many other places, as we reelect Barack Obama, they're going the other direction, you know, as fast as their feet will take them. And there's lots of other places that are doing the same, and it's kind of astonishing, these two parts of the country just heading in opposite directions.
Well, let me just pose what you mentioned a little earlier, Thomas Frank, when you said you didn't want to call the 57 million people stupid. Well, they have been called stupid in the terms of they're not they're voting against their self-interest, but they're also been called racist. That's a an underlying motivating factor. That Barack Obama got what like 39% of white votes. That it's just made up of single issue voters like guns or anti-choice. That's a lot of people to make a generalization about, but what gives with these folks?
Well, a lot of different things. When I wrote Kansas, the aspect that I tried to focus on was the class aspect and the really weird ways that class issues got refracted through the culture wars. You remember all that stuff about the real America and
sure.
the red states where people watch NASCAR and are all sort of proletarian together, and it was this was always just so much nonsense, and it was fun and easy to make fun of. that's what I did back in those days. But the coming of the Great Recession really scrambled all of that stuff. I have to admit, I am surprised that Barack Obama did not make greater inroads into a lot of parts of America, and I'm also surprised that the Republicans have so completely failed. I mean, failed to reach out to minority voters. If anything, they're getting worse on this question, not better. It's getting worse for them.
Today, Sean Hannity said that we got to start reexamining our immigration policy.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. No kidding. But but this is like they've seen this coming for a long time. You think of George Bush. Certainly played this. I didn't like George Bush. I didn't vote for George Bush, but he played this question very differently than Mitt Romney and company did, and he was actually successful at this. And you wonder, how they managed to screw this up so badly.
Well, David Brooks, the New York Times conservative commentator, actually a moderate, I was almost expecting him to endorse Barack Obama, but wasn't forthcoming. But in one column a month or two ago, he said that the Republican Party is the party of the white working class.
Yeah, that's right. Isn't that funny?
And, of course, when you get out of Alabama and Mississippi, the percentages of Euro-Americans is a lot greater in their support. But my wife and I walk through three Detroit suburbs, and in terms of class, they're like working class Oak Park, sort of lower middle class Ferndale, and then upper middle class Pleasant Ridge. And I'm sure you can guess easily which has the biggest support for Barack Obama. The upper scale one.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's another aspect to all this that nobody's talking about right now, and we'll probably come back to it at some point. But David Brooks was sort of right about that. I don't like to say David Brooks was. Look, this is all. It's much more confusing than that, and it's much more complicated than that. That if the white working person in question is a member of a labor union, they statistically tend to vote more Democratic.
70%. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's lots of other things like that mitigate this. And that's also. You're talking about the Democratic Party, which is. Traditionally, that's their brand identity. They're supposed to be the party of working people, and to the degree that they've managed to screw that up and lose so many of these voters, it's a very interesting question. But the phenomenon of rich liberals is also really interesting, and I wouldn't be surprised if you saw that diminish a little bit this time. I was recently in back in Kansas City, as in Johnson County, is like I say, a very Republican area, but an area that had a lot of Barack Obama yard signs in 2008. People were so sick of George Bush, but this time, we're talking about the very wealthy parts of Kansas City here. So not a lot of people, but a lot of money. These people loved Mitt Romney. He was one of theirs. He was like, he was a man after their own heart. And There, I mean, what's really funny is there was this small sort of part of America that loved Mitt Romney as much as, you know, progressives loved Barack Obama in 2008, and they were crazy about Mitt Romney. I mean, it wasn't very many people, statistically speaking, but they did exist, and it was that kind of population, you know, very wealthy suburbs. They were so happy they had a Wall Street banker running for the presidency.
Like, Thomas Frank, 30,
great thing.
30 seconds. I don't know if you can do this. Pity the Billionaire, your latest book, The Hard Times Swindle.
And oh, I pity him even more now.
And the unlikely comeback of the right, will they be coming back in 2014?
Look, who knows? I think yes. And the reason I think yes is because all, you know, every pundit in Washington is saying the opposite. So
I want to thank you so much for being with us. Michael Kinsley in the New York Times Book Review section says Thomas Frank is the thinking person's Michael Moore. I think that's a good quote. Some people might think that's damned by faint praise, but I love it. Check out all of Thomas Frank's book, beginning with What's the Matter of with Kansas Going Through the Wrecking Crew. They give us a good picture of what's happening in our country. Thomas Frank, thanks. Oh, I should say, sure, I haven't given our the websites. You can go to, I did write it down, tcfrank.com. There'll also be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. Thanks for being on the broadcast.
Sure thing, anytime.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this. Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werbe.
Thank you very much. Peter Werbe here with you. Thanks for joining me. I'm going to start just with a dirty little secret. As you probably know, I interview probably 80 to 90 people a year. Very frequent. Maybe 80% of those people are authors. And I never read the book ahead of time. Usually I can't. Sometimes I get it a day ahead of time. Sometimes I get it the same day. And this interview is going to be with the producer-director of a DVD. And I thought, you know, I don't have to watch this. I can do it the same way I do a book. But I, this morning, I said, you know, I'm going to watch this whole thing. And I am so glad I did. This is such a terrific account of ultimately a struggle of David versus Goliath. And here's what's going on. In fact, I think I'm going to do this before I even start. I'll introduce the person who made this all happen with lots of other people, of course. She's Joan Sackler. She's the producer-director of a DVD called Locked Out. It's a film by her, and it's narrated by the actor Peter Coyote. And it's a story of how a small-town miners in California stood up and faced down a multi-billion dollar global corporation. And we're reaching Joan Sackler in her office on the West Coast. Welcome to the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I think maybe just to kind of set the stage for this, I can just read a little from the beginning of it. And it says, and accurately, this is the compelling story of 560 unionized borax miners in the desert town of Boron, California, who faced off against Rio Tinto. And that's a British-Australian multi-billion dollar global corporation. It's the third largest mining company in the world. Boron has about 2,000 people. It's really ordinary working-class Americans, and suddenly their contract expired. With the, they belong to the ILWU, the International Longshoremen Workers Union, and this is something, how this is kind of in the desert, how the longshoremen are organizing here. But the company, like they so often do, wanted to drastically cut the miners' pay and benefits, and the workers rejected this, and you would think they'd get beat up pretty badly. Well, this is the story of Locked Out, the story of the Boron miners' struggle, and Joan Sackler, the producer-director. So where to begin on all this? Where in the, how in the world would these miners, these working-class men and women, figure they could take on this multinational, this huge company that mines all over the world? Where did they get the idea they could ever win?
Well, it was through the meetings that they had over the months where their contract had expired in late 2009, and there were incredible numbers of union meetings, committees, et cetera, to talk about, well, what are we going to do? Because we've had this same contract for 40 years, which has been tweaked up and down, and people have, you know, some of the issues have been raised over the years when the contract has expired, and there's been give and take on both sides over the years. So this time, Rio Tinto decided that they were going to throw out 40 years worth of contract language, and they just slapped on the table a contract which was only like 8 or 9 pages, and in it was like cuts. And the workers were shocked. They were absolutely shocked. And so after many, many meetings, especially with the international ILWU, which is based in San Francisco, and we would drive down to the desert to talk to them, these workers decided this is it. They want to make a stand to keep their middle class lives. And so they decided to vote to accept the lockout. And it was 100% of the people who voted to accept the lockout, and that was in the end of January. And then on January 31st, the gates closed, and they were not allowed to go to work. And instead, security guards were hired from different parts of the country, and replacement workers were hired from different parts of the country, and they were escorted in to replace these miners. So it is a very interesting story, and I started reading about it in the LA Times, and that's what perked my interest, and I got permission from the ILWU to make a documentary about the whole struggle, not knowing whether the lockout would last 1 week, 1 month, 1 year. And as it turned out, it lasted almost 4 months. And I guess what was so beautiful about filming this documentary were the workers who had never been involved in anything political before in their lives. They raise their kids go to college, they go to church, they have a lot of family living in neighboring towns whom they get together with, and they've never been involved in any kind of a political action before.
Well, that's what you get, certainly, out of Locked Out, your DVD, this transformative quality that happened as a result of being locked out by the company. Let me just clear up one thing. I actually assigned the wrong name to the ILWU. It's the International Longshore and Warehouse Union. And my guest is Joan Sackler. She's the producer and director of the DVD that chronicles the struggle of this union against this big multinational. And Joan Sackler has directed the award-winning documentary Unprecedented, the 2000 presidential election, a number of other very important documentaries as well. And she's been the assistant producer and or publicist for numerous political documentaries, including the Academy Award-winning film The Panama Deception and Yellow Wasp, Anatomy of a War Crime. One of the things that so many things occurred to me watching this was I thought, how in the world could they take on this big company? And tell us something about Rio Tinto. And this is, we say, this multi-billion dollar multinational. And how extensive is it? It's the third largest mining concern in the world. So what does that mean in practical terms?
Well, they do have mines in almost every continent, and they have a very bad reputation amongst workers and amongst communities, because a lot of times they go in to an area without getting all their permits and without meeting with the residents of the area, and they start building a mine. And a lot of times they've destroyed environment, they've destroyed people's homes and communities, and they've polluted water. Terrible situation, not only in various areas of the United States, but also abroad. So it is remarkable that these 560 miners decided to stand up against Rio Tinto, which has gotten away with everything for so many years. Nobody has stood up to them before. So this was a remarkable story.
It was indeed. In fact, they have a presence in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, correct?
Oh, yes. In the Upper Peninsula of Michigan is an absolutely beautiful area of forest and land, which people have used for years for hiking, camping. They go kayaking on the rivers, etc. And it's also a place where an Indian tribe has lived for generations. And Rio Tinto started digging for minerals in the Upper Peninsula without getting all their permits. And it is very, very dangerous what they're doing because it's called sulfide mining. And when sulfide is in contact with air and water, it becomes sulfuric acid. And that acid will get into the streams, which will go into Lake Superior. It's really, really awful. So all the residents in the area, different environmental groups, in the Sierra Club, the Wildlife Federation, they have all gotten together, and they have met with Rio Tinto. They have met with the city, with the state. They've even filed a lawsuit against this mining company.
This is all
in
Michigan.
And so far, nothing's happened as far as environmentalists and people in the community winning. So far, Rio Tinto is going ahead with steamrolling with building this very dangerous mine.
And this is in Michigan. The DVD, the film we're talking about, is Locked Out, the story of the Boron miners' struggle. And this is a struggle that took place in Boron, California, when almost 600 unionized borax miners faced off against Rio Tinto. And they have holdings all across the world. Now, they actually, the miners here, this ILWU local in this small town, small local, they got support from all over the world. In your film, Locked Out, you see this incredible expression from, you know, Australia and the demonstration in London. Tell us about some of that.
Well, as part of the strategy of outreach and getting support, they had a committee. It was a media committee, which, number one, reached out to local and national newspapers, radio, television, in order to tell their story and send out press releases. But the other thing they did was to organize the media that they created themselves. And so they created a Facebook page and a website, which they had never done before. Many of them, their children had to teach them how to do that because they had never done it before. And they did tremendous amount of research. They landed up getting invited to many places around the world where Rio Tinto has mines or where they have offices. For example, their main office is in London and their subsidiary office is in Australia. So in both those cases, they were invited to come and speak. They were invited to join in protest demonstrations in support of them. And in London, they actually went to the shareholder meeting of Rio Tinto, which is held once a year in London.
This is these industrial workers from Boron, California, made the trip to London. Wow.
They did. And they flew to London. The union paid for it. And they spoke at the microphone and during the Q&A period. And they talked about what happened to their livelihood, and they wanted answers, and of course they didn't get very many answers. So they did a tremendous amount of outreach, and they got literally thousands of Facebook remarks of support and phone calls. It was just an incredible story. And the workers did this themselves. I mean, yes, the union certainly helped in many, many ways. But the workers stepped up and, you know, democratized their whole struggle. So it's a very unique situation that you don't see in many struggles today.
My guest on the Peter Werby Show is Joan Sackler. She's the producer-director of Locked Out. It's a film that she's made chronicling the struggle of these unionized borax miners in the desert town of Boron, California. They're fighting this multinational mining company, Rio Tinto. It's narrated by Peter Coyote. It's interesting in and of itself. You could get this. You can go to lockedout2010.org, sit and watch it and think, yeah, it might, you know, be kind of inspiring. The other thing you could do is get some of your neighbors together. Show it at your union hall. Show it at your church. Show it at a school. Because in many ways, this shows what ordinary people can do. And a thread through here that Joan Seckler is weaving is that these are people that never did this before. People say, well, how are we going to get out of this mess we're in general in this country? Well, one of the things that is done is self-organizing. Although these people, as we've been saying, had lots of support. So they had lots of support from other unions as well in California, correct?
Correct. Yes. The L.A. County Federation of Labor organized a caravan which included huge truckloads of food, which the Teamsters drove up in these giant trucks all the way up to Boron, and the workers started a food pantry because their salary had been too much to be able to get food stamps. However, they needed to eat for their families, and so this food pantry was started, and all the miners' families came, and they were able to get free food. The other thing that the union did, the international union did, was that they raised funds to help these workers so that they wouldn't have to lose their homes. They could pay their mortgages and their bills, and nobody lost a home, and nobody had their lights turned out during this whole struggle.
Now,
it was amazing.
It is, and I would highly recommend it. Locked Out is the name of the DVD. And you mentioned at the beginning when the corporation said, okay, we can't come to a conclusion for a contract, the one we've had for four decades, so we're locking you out, we're hiring replacement workers, and that replacement workers is rather the official benign word that's used for people to take the jobs of unionized people. Union people call them scabs. Jack London, in fact, go to Google and just look up, I can't recite it by memory, but Jack London, the great American author, described scabs in a little paragraph and nothing lower that in his estimation. But who were the replacement workers that took the jobs of the workers in Boron, California?
Well, there was a company back east, I think they're in Pennsylvania, that is basically a union-busting company, and Rio Tinto hired them to hire replacement workers, and they came from around the country. They were not local. They were definitely not local.
Oh, that's what I wondered. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, the same thing
happened
here in the Detroit newspaper strike. It cost the Detroit newspapers a 10-year strike. Was it 5 years? 5 years, I guess. And, so they brought in all these replacement workers, and they were paying them like triple what they would have had to pay their union workers.
Wow.
Yeah, but they'd wanted to do anything to break the union. So, all right, so they had all, and that's part of the footage in Locked Out. So you see these busloads and these SUVs. These filled with these replacement workers, what the unionists called scabs. Tell us a little about this. What's portrayed in your DVD, Locked Out?
Well, there are two scenes. There's a daytime scene and an evening scene. During the day, the miners took shifts at the gate, and they would walk along or in front of a scab's car as they were going in or out of the plant. And they didn't touch the car. There was no confrontation. But what they did was to hand out the literature that they had written up. They put out a bulletin, and it talked about the strike and what was happening. I mean, their lockout and what was happening. And they gave it to everybody going in and out. They also had conversations with some of them and said, look, we understand why you're going into work. You need a job. But while you're there, would you please give us information about what is happening inside? What kind of meetings are taking place with management? And are you putting the product of borax together to have it shipped to customers around the world? What is happening? And so they did get information. They got information about how these workers were unskilled. They didn't know what they were doing. And they messed up a lot of the orders so that customers were very angry about what had happened. And also, a lot of times, the scab would come out with a truck pretending that they were loaded up with the borax ready to be shipped around the globe, and indeed, their truck was empty. So during the day, they spent time trying to talk to the replacement workers. But in the evening, that's when all the families came out, stood on a line on both sides of the road, and just screamed and yelled at them when they were coming out. More or less like what you see with Verizon strikers on the East Coast now, where they're just screaming and yelling at the scabs and really angry.
I wonder if that has any effect. I guess it's hard to tell. On the cover, or on the case of your film, your DVD case, Locked Out, they show, are those armed guards or are those like sheriff's deputies?
They're sheriffs.
Okay.
It's very interesting because the Kern County Sheriff's Department was put in charge of watching everything that happened outdoors and near the gate. And secretly, they were supportive of the Boron miners because Kern County sheriffs are unionized and they've been working without a contract for a long time, and they really understood what these Boron miners were going through.
And they probably knew some of them. That's what happened in the Detroit newspaper
strike. They probably knew some of them.
Yeah, during the Detroit newspaper strike, the Oakland County sheriffs actually took out an ad in the strike paper saying, "We support the right of people to strike."
Oh, wow.
Right. I hope, and I know this always happens because people get in their car and they turn on the radio and they go, "Ooh, what are they talking about?" We're talking about a film by Joan Seckler, who is the producer-director of Locked Out, and it's a story of how these small-town miners in Boron, California, stood up against this huge multinational corporation and were locked out. That means they just kicked them all out because they couldn't come to a contract and brought in replacement workers. But eventually, it was settled. Why did I was shocked. I thought this was going to have a sad ending. Why did Rio Tinto, this enormous corporation that'll do almost anything around the world, why did it agree to settle at least fairly amicably with such a small group of workers?
Well, the answer is money. They lost a lot of money because their replacement workers were unskilled, made a lot of mistakes. And, in fact, borax is used in many, many different products, including LCD screens. And one of the Rio Tinto's largest customers is Samsung. And apparently, after processing the borax in a wrong way, it was shipped to Samsung, and they in turn took this mineral and put it in their LCD TVs, and thousands of the TVs were broken and couldn't be used.
Oops.
So Samsung, you know, threatened to sue, and in the end, Rio Tinto had to pay them a lot of money. So they lost a lot of money. And on top of that, there was a lawsuit filed with the National Labor Relations Board for this illegal contract and not being able to negotiate. They wouldn't negotiate. They just said take it or leave it. So it was a combination of things that they finally said, okay, this is it. And they brought back the contract, which they've had on and off for 40 years, and they signed a decent contract. I would say the one thing that the workers had to give up, which will not affect them, but will affect new workers, is that new workers will no longer have a fixed pension the way the workers right now have it. Instead, they're going to have a 401k.
Joan Seckler. Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but we're almost out of time, and we mentioned you as the producer-director of Locked Out, which is in many ways a creative but also a technical role in producing films. Joan Seckler, as a person, here you're involved with this great, the emotions that are expressed in this are just incredible. How did it affect you as a person?
It affected me greatly because I have never made a documentary about a worker's struggle before, and I just fell in love with a lot of these people, and I was very enamored of the work that they did. So I learned a lot from them. They learned a lot from me. And I'm just hoping that your listeners would be interested enough to get the DVD at lockedout2010.org. That's LOCKEDOUT 2010.org. You can read more about the film, and you can order it online. It's very inexpensive.
And as I said, having just watched it a few hours ago, it's an extraordinary documentary. I mean, all of the cinematic qualities are just incredible. The people, the every time I thought, well, this is going to be a little small story that has to do with this little town in Southern California. Suddenly you're in London. Suddenly you're back realizing that Rio Tinto has this connection with the Spanish fascist dictatorship of the 1930s and 1940s. So it's an incredible story. And ultimately, David beats Goliath. And that's what I think is so heartening. So not only is this, quote, interesting, it's a possible resource. Because right now, all of us are functioning as individuals. These people acted together. They pooled their skills. They made connections, and they won. So I would heartily say just get it as an individual, but also get your neighbors, get your relatives, show it at some place where you can get neighbors together, and who knows what will come out of that. So it's lockedout2010.org. Joan Sackler, the producer and director of Locked Out, has been my guest, and there'll also be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, Werbe.com. Joan Sackler, thanks for being on the broadcast.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit. This is 101 WRIF. Thanks for rocking with us online at WRIF.com.
How would you like to see customers through your door today and the next day and the day after that? I have the answer you're looking for. RiffDeals.com. Hey, you're online now. Just click on the banner in the player window to find out more. Remember, there's no upfront cost to you. It's a partnership with your success as the goal. WRAF's marketing pros work with you to develop the perfect deal. Then RiffDeals.com uses the power of on-air, online, and social media marketing to help you reach new customers. Oh, did I mention that you get a check within 10 days of your successful deal running? That's cash in your pocket and customers in the door.
Detroit's rock station rocks worldwide. You're listening to WRIF.com. is VIP style with Drew and Mike in the Lady Jane's Luxury Suite. Listen to Drew and Mike on 101 The Riff for your chance to win. Brought to you by Lady Jane's Haircuts for Men. It's wicked awesome. And 101 WRIF. The Riff.